look at it, you say to yourself, I can't listen to this song for 4 hours.
I was really looking forward to coming back.
We missed you, Steve.
Steve, we did miss you.
I missed you guys, too.
The other day, Wendy said, what about Stan, the news guy? How's he doing? And I go, Stan, the news guy? What?
Thank you.
How was Prague? Tell us stories of Prague.
It was wonderful. Vienna was wonderful.
Did you have any Vienna beef?
No, I had wonderful sausages, though. You know, they just sell them on the street corner.
They do, really?
Oh, yeah. They in Vienna, they would have these little, you know, sausage stands where they'd sell you a glass of beer just in a public corner. And
wow.
Like a foot long, and they'd stuff it in this. They'd hollow out a bun, like so it wouldn't open side to side. It'd have a cavity in the middle. Stuff it in there with about 6 tablespoons of Dijon mustard.
Oh, how beautiful is that?
I had a pig's knuckle in Prague.
How did the Very pig good. Feel about that?
Well, curious? You know, pig has more than one knuckle.
Right.
So pig is
that
fine.
Like pig's feet that we had? My grandmother used to get the jar of pickled pig's feet.
No, it's
why.
Like they call it a pig's knee or pig's knuckle, but it's...
What does that taste like?
Like a shank?
It's like pork belly. You know, it's got a really crispy exterior and then a layer of fat and then really tender meat around the...
I'm sorry,
bone.
I'm drooling and Bill is making a weird face. The fat makes it flavorful.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
It just doesn't sound good.
It's so that fat you can, like, you know, sift it between your teeth.
All right, now you've ruined it
like
for
that.
Us.
Boy, the food and the beer. And it's funny, the culture of Prague, right? They talk about it's all about beer.
Right.
And beer is actually, it is literally cheaper than bottled water.
Is it really?
In Prague,
it's
right.
So plentiful. And the drinking age there is non-existent, right? You can be a 3-year-old and have a bottle filled with beer if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think, in fact, a lot of formula is beer.
It's
I'm
beer
jealous
based.
I was born here.
But here's the thing. So you go there and you say, I'll have a beer. Do you have a beer list? And they said, well, we have light or dark.
That's it?
They don't have, it's not like, you know, you'd think that'd be a place where microbreweries or there'd be competition, and it's not.
Why would that be? Urkel, that's confusing.
And it's just not
like
the way it is. Yeah, well, it's everywhere. Everywhere.
Is it really?
And that's what you drink. That's what they have at almost every place.
Yeah, and accommodations are nice, of course.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is Bertrand Travel. You're getting the best when you go.
4 stars,
Stan
baby.
Bertrand Travel.
Yeah, Stan Bertrand Travel.
We had a great group again. You know, I always have great luck with the people who travel with us, and a lot of people, we had just a lot of fun.
These locations? I'm curious, what of all the places in the world, why'd you go to Vienna and to Prague?
Blindfold and a finger.
As the proprietor of Stan Bertrand Travel,
yes.
I go where I want to go. And
it's the way it should be.
Everyone talked about Prague, and I've always wanted to see Vienna. We actually went to the opera in Prague.
What were they doing?
Turandot. It's a Puccini, but it's got the Nessun Dorma, which is a very famous piece, one of the only ones I knew, and I was so happy when they started because I didn't know it. You know, people in the group, they said that was my favorite part because we would have never gone to opera otherwise.
Yeah.
Had a night of Strauss and Mozart in Vienna.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was just that we had corny times too, but some culture and...
When my wife and I have been to England, and when we went to England, people
hello.
Said, yeah, they said that. They right. did say hello the way Wendy just said, but they said they can spot Americans a mile away just by the way we carry ourselves and by what we dress and things. Is that obvious when Americans are in Vienna? Can the locals just look over and go, well, that's an American?
Maybe. The biggest disappointing thing to me was, and this isn't about the U.S., but everything was in English.
Oh, was it really?
I mean, so many of the signs, so many, and you know, it's just become. I mean, it's not just the U.S., but you know, it's a shared language by so many different countries that it's just easier that way. So, I mean, you know, the Czech.
But that's good, though, isn't it? I think that's good for you, anyway. It makes traveling easier.
It's easier, but it's fun to struggle a little bit too.
Yeah, to see their culture
and try to
their
figure
language.
It out. And I just wanted a shirt that said Prague. It's spelled. In Czech, and our letters look like P-R-A-H-A.
Yeah.
And nothing. It all said Prague, or Vienna is W-I-E-N in German, and they didn't sell those shirts. And we stopped in a mall in Brno, Czech Republic, tiny city. And Sharon and I were there. We're like, let's go into the shopping store where they buy their clothes. It must say something authentic.
Right.
And the T-shirts, I'm not kidding you, they had a display of about 10 or 15 T-shirts hanging up. They said Malibu, L.A., New York.
Get out.
No, it's true. So, you
and
know.
Ironically, Wendy, they don't take checks there.
No, they don't.
You would think they would, but they don't.
No.
And what? How are they perceiving what's going on here politically? Like, do they think it's funny? Do they? Are they confused by it? What do they think
you
is
mean
going
Donald
on?
Donald Trump?
Yeah, by all that, are they happy or not happy with
that? I think
that?
I can speak for most of our group to say it was a very nice respite while we were there.
Because that's not
what
all
it
they're,
be.
They're talking
yeah,
about.
It
yeah.
didn't, there was one cartoonist drawing Trump as the devil in the Prague Square, and I saw that, and you know, and our guide Tomas, who was Hungarian, was great, and we talked politics and Trump a little bit, but it didn't come up a lot.
Wow. What about the Brexit? Did that come up?
Brexit was talked about quite a bit, yeah. And then Sharon and I went on to London too. So,
and did you buy lots of stuff since the dollar? You could get a lot for your money there.
No, but we enjoyed it. It was more affordable.
In London, are people happy that Cameron is no longer going to be in charge? Is that a good thing for them, or are they?
I think they're still really struggling with
yeah,
it.
I
don't know.
I would imagine.
But we saw Kinky Boots there.
Oh, you did?
Oh, Cyndi Lauper's play.
Yeah, yeah, it was great. And then we saw Guys and Dolls, which was phenomenal. I never expected it. We saw a Sunday matinee, but Rebel Wilson was in it.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Who I did not know. I mean,
from Pitch Perfect? Is yeah, that who
yeah.
that is?
Emma and her friend Maggie loved it. But so we went to that and a great show, too. But just a great trip.
Oh, that's fun.
I think we're going to do Iceland next summer.
That's good timing.
Yeah.
Iceland in summer?
Yes.
You are good.
Yes. Yes.
We'll
you should
see.
Have Bill do Stan Bertrand.
Guide.
No, you just Stan, the publicity.
Right.
Yeah, do you want me in on that? I could help you out with
you
that.
You could be the narrator. Welcome to Prague. No checks.
Just think about it. You don't have to say yes right now. Just consider it.
One other thing in my little travelogue. So when we flew home, we flew over the tip of Greenland, mm-hmm. which I've only seen once before. Very cool. And then when we're coming up on the northeast coast of Canada, we could actually see icebergs floating in the ocean.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was fun.
That's excellent.
It was
That's
very
pretty
cool.
Wild.
If people want to know more about Stan Bertrand Travel, how do they find out?
Well, it's weird, but Steve Bertrand Travel is the website.
Was Stan taken?
Stan is taken.
Darn it.
And yeah, we're starting to talk about Iceland next year, so if you want to do that, give me an email and get
that would
on
be
the
a
list.
Fun trip.
Why don't we do the show live from there,
from
and then you
could
do
it?
The Wintrust Business Lunch. We can all go. I've never
right.
been.
I like that.
You can go. I'd happy to have you lead a tour.
All right.
I've been a tour guide for many years at
I know
Brookfield
that.
Zoo.
I know that. And I've been giving out false information since I was 4 years old, so it's
We're
natural.
Perfect.
Yeah, think about it, Steve.
Thank you, Stan. Welcome back.
Well, it's good. I thought it was going to be better, but it's still
good.
It's pretty good to be
it's
here.
It's fine.
Right.
All right. Steve's back. It's good news for everybody. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. And I'm reading again. Steve Bertrand. Doing news. Steve Bertrand now doing news for us.
Grateful Dead. I know that they were just at Alpine Valley. I know this because as soon as we got home from Nashville, Jimmy Mac drove to Alpine Valley, met some high school friends and his cousin, and they stayed on the grounds at Alpine Valley. I didn't mm-hmm. know there was a resort right there.
I didn't either.
And so it makes it really easy then to walk to the show.
Sure.
Hanging out poolside, getting primed a little bit, and then you walk to see the Grateful Dead. And it's funny because I saw the Grateful Dead once. It turned out to be Jerry Garcia's last show at Soldier Field.
Oh.
Jim has always been a deadhead.
Yeah.
Not full-blown. He doesn't wear tie-dye.
Yeah.
But he likes the Dead very much. And he took me when we were still dating, and I went and bought this little tie-dye.
TIE Fighter Die, by the way. He's a Star Wars fan. He's managed to merge the two loves.
But he doesn't dress up for that either.
No, he doesn't. Nope.
So I went and I got this tie-dyed dress and I tried to play the part and it was like 120 degrees and it was like an ankle-length tie-dyed dress and I felt really cool, like, oh, I'm fitting in.
Yeah.
I did not get into it at all.
You didn't do that weird dance thing that they do during the show?
The twirl dance
the twirl
or whatever
dance.
It is.
Yeah.
I just, it's like we got there and 4 hours later, the song ended. It was like
That's
the same song.
That is how it is.
And I mean, there are a few songs of the Grateful Dead that I enjoy, the hits,
yeah.
dare I say.
They should have done the theme for the movie Neverending Story. Wouldn't that make sense? Those songs go on forever.
And last
You could have kids while their songs are playing.
I know. And I just don't, I can't groove to it.
No,
I don't know.
Strange,
plus,
isn't it?
Plus, I was straight. I was not under the influence. I may have had a couple of beers, but mm-hmm. I just didn't fit in. And right. I didn't hate it, but it was like, it was something I saw once. I'm glad I got to see Jerry Garcia. But so last year, I believe, was the 50th anniversary of the Grateful Dead.
I think so, yeah.
And I believe Trey Anastasio from Fish got together with the original members, and they did like a 50th anniversary
but
show.
But weren't they calling it? Didn't they say this is going to be the end for us?
They
the
always,
farewell.
How many times has Cher had a farewell tour?
Yeah, I guess
tour?
So. But they were fairly convincing in saying this is going to be our last go-around.
Yeah, because we were talking to Ben and Jerry,
yeah.
and they were freaking out that they weren't going to get tickets because
right,
this is it.
Right.
I
but
remember
that.
Was
that. A lie.
It was a lie, but here's the new, is it, I guess, incarnation
yeah.
of it? John Mayer is now fronting the band.
He is?
And it was really weird because I made fun of my husband saying, you don't even like John Mayer. He goes, I do now. It's like he was so poppy and did all this stuff before, but now I didn't know he could play guitar so well.
Yeah.
He evidently has been not a replacement for Jerry Garcia, but he nailed it. And it just seems like a weird combination
to me. That is a strange combination. So during the show, do they only do Grateful Dead songs or does he do some of John Mayer hits too?
I didn't ask Jim that. I don't think he did.
I didn't even. Why isn't that getting any publicity? I didn't know that that's who was filling in for Jerry Garcia.
Because if you saw a headline that said Grateful Dead, would you even look at it?
I would say to myself, those guys retired. I want my money back. Even though I didn't give any money, I would demand money back.
But yeah, I just found it shocking, and I like to taunt and say,
right.
Oh, really? You just spent the night there, and it's John Mayer, who I have liked. He's been poppy.
John Mayer's fine.
He really can blues out, though. I
yeah.
mean, he's a great guitarist, and looking at his solo stuff before, I didn't really realize that.
Right.
But evidently he
try
did
to
well.
Sound, he doesn't try to sound
no,
like Jerry Garcia.
He sounds
like John Mayer.
Yeah. But I just thought that was a weird pairing.
Did other pop stars audition to replace Jerry Garcia and
Axl
we're not
Rose
aware?
Did.
Axl Rose did, yeah.
Because who is he filling in for when Guns N' Roses is not, for AC/DC?
Oh, yeah, right. That's
so,
true,
yeah,
isn't
Axl
it?
Wanted to do it.
That would have been an interesting show. Dave Matthews, did he fill in? Did he try to?
I'm surprised he didn't because he's kind
that
of
almost
that
seems,
ilk.
Right.
But
Bruno Mars, did he fill in for Jerry Garcia?
I'll bet you he could do it.
I know he could do it.
There'd be way more showmanship.
I know. Actually, that would be the thing. It'd be a little too bouncy. People would get dizzy and they'd fall down.
And all the members of the Grateful Dead would have matching outfits.
Right.
I think maybe he
right.
should have done it.
All right. Well, next time they retire and lie to us and come back.
You've heard
there
all of
them. There should
be
a law on that, about
There's
that.
No law.
I saw the Who's farewell tour in 1980. I think it was 3 or 4.
And it wasn't.
No, because
right?
I just saw them last year, and they were awesome.
It was like halfway through their career.
Does the word farewell tour not mean what we think it means?
They were suspending
goodbye.
Their
no,
tour.
Means,
that's what they were doing.
It's concert for fleece.
But it's so funny because Roger, I got to go and do a little meet and greet with Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend.
Oh, nice.
And you can tell they just totally are, they
oh,
don't get along.
I know.
They probably
isn't that
never
sad?
Did, really. But they know
sad.
Where their bread is buttered.
Right.
Same with Keith Richards and Mick Jagger. They're,
they
don't
hang. They
just
put up with each other? Yeah. Oh,
that's how we will be at our 5 farewell tour
right,
from now.
Right.
This is your second one, isn't
this
it?
Is the second
it is.
Farewell tour.
The, yeah. What was the time in between? 16 years or something
about,
like that?
Right around there, yeah. Yeah.
I hope this one lasts longer, 16 years together.
That would be better. That would be a lot better. We'll take a break. Steve has the news, and then a whole lot more coming your way. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Steve. Steve Bertrand is back, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome
nice
back.
To have him back.
It's great to be back.
Very nice to have
missed
him back.
You guys.
Can I tell you, my kids were out past curfew last night playing Pokemon Go.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing, isn't it?
It's really fun, but I'm really scared now. Eric Zorn sent us some information. Did you see it?
No. What does it say?
My kids did this Pokemon Go. It happened when we were in Nashville, and then they said, Mom, you know, maybe you should play it because people are going to be talking about it. And they were right. Everybody's been talking about it.
Yeah.
Much to your chagrin.
Yeah.
And when I was registering, you can just register an account or you could go through your Google account.
And don't you think, though, one of the biggest differences between you and me is that if everyone's doing something, I tend to stay away from it. I'm not in. If everyone's doing something, I go, I don't want to do that then.
That's where I say you're no fun.
Right. That's because, what I mean.
Oh, my God. You know.
You, a collector of cartoon characters and action figures.
But everyone's not doing that.
Like more people than not are doing it now.
When everyone was doing that ice challenge, like every day people go, hey, everyone's doing that ice bucket. You have to do it too. And I go, I don't have to do it. No, you do because everyone's doing it.
How about lunch?
I don't want to do it. I won't have lunch.
No, you're not going to do lunch today?
Everyone's having lunch. Right. I don't want any lunch. Breathing? Who wants to breathe? Right. Thanks, but no thanks.
A lot of us want to breathe.
Well, I was reading something, and if you, I got to find the email from Zorn, the feisty Eric Zorn, if you will.
Even his emails are feisty.
I know.
The wet blanket Eric Zorn, in this case, is it?
No, he was on board with this.
Oh, good, good.
I was the one trying to find reason with them yesterday.
Well, you know, my son came home with, and he'd been running around Jewett Park, the park where we go, and finding things.
We'll edit that out.
Right. The park that isn't necessarily Jewett Park. It's just a park. It's not important where it is.
Wow. Funny. Stands out of practice. Yep.
But, but everyone's out there involved. I love when it's community like that. Everyone's getting involved in it, and, you know?
I guess. I don't know.
It's so fun. And Pokemon did what Fitbit failed to do, get people moving. That's what Eric sent to me. Elizabeth Greewee.
Is Elizabeth Greewee involved in
this? I don't know if that's
this?
How you say it, but all she right. did something. She did an article about people. Kids are getting up and going, unlike the Fitbit, which was supposed to make you go up and go.
Well, everyone I know who fell into that, into the Fitbit craze, did it for 4 days or 5 days, and then after a while they went, all right, I'm done with this, and that was it. Like, yeah. Even though your intentions are good, like, well, now I'll walk 2 miles a day. This will be the greatest thing in the world for me. At some point, you just go, or maybe I won't. I tried it for a few days, and now I moved on.
Well, I can't wait to get outside and play, although yesterday when I was playing, a bird pooped on my shirt.
Let that be a harbinger of what you can expect.
And I just captured Pidgey. So go figure that out.
It all ties in.
But actually, Eric Zorn did not tell me this, but this is like just breaking news that happened about an hour ago. The developer behind the viral hit Pokemon Go says that its game was requesting full access to Google accounts in error when users sign up to play on the Apple iPhone. So if you go through your Google account, mm-hmm. which I did, mm-hmm. it has access to all your Google information, what, like emails, your Gmail, everything.
So how... You have to explain how that's dangerous, because I know it is, but I don't know why it is.
Well, in a statement emailed to USA Today, Niantic, which is the company, I guess, says the app erroneously requests full access to the player's Google account when logging in with their Google credentials through iOS, Apple's operating system. Niantic says they're working on a fix and Google will reduce permissions required by the app. But it can get your user ID, your email address, all your Google profile information when you log on through that Google account.
Right.
So just another way to be hacked.
Yeah, I guess it is. Did you hear the comic book guy that Steve Cochran had on
this
morning?
That's our comic book shop.
Is that your comic book shop?
Chimera, yeah.
All right, so here's where I was confused. He was explaining that there are... I don't remember what the terminology is, but there's like these hot spots.
Pokey spots.
Pokey spots, I guess. So
he refuses to say it.
His is a comic book shop, so that's good because you want people of like mind to visit your comic book shop. But he also said that there's a church in the area that also registers.
Every
as,
church.
Okay. So if you're a church, do you want all these people just walking through your church?
You don't
trying
go inside.
To find monsters?
You don't go
but
inside.
You just... What do you do?
You just go linger around to me, outside? That's free advertising. Oh, the Methodist Church? Maybe I'll become a member.
Are Pokemon religious by nature? Are they
I don't know their
religious?
Religion. I know that there's a right here on the Tribune Tower, is there a boulder from, where is it from? Giza or something?
Oh, the building is made up of bricks from all different structures
but
around the
world. But this particular brick, there's a pokey. It's a pokey spot. That's a clue, everybody. But don't get it before me.
I don't know what that means.
You're just
what
walking
does that mean?
Collecting these Pokemon characters, the pocket monsters, if you will, and it's just a stupid little game. When I was walking the dog last night, and there weren't very many Pokemon left in our neighborhood because all the kids are out collecting them.
So once one gets collected, they're all gone?
I don't know that. I'm just kind of new to this. I'm only on level 3. The Giza Pyramid Fragment is where one of the Poke Spots is. So you can walk to the side of the Tribune Tower.
Climb up the building.
No, you just stand in front of it. And then the GPS locates
you. And
then
you get points.
Yeah, I'm on level 3.
And then what do you do with those points? You can't win, right? There's no way to win.
You are so flipping competitive. I mean, you just...
But why would you play a game where you can't win?
Well, you can win. You can get more if you collect more of these Pokemons.
Now, how many do you need to win?
I think it's an ongoing thing, and
it's in the song. You got to catch them all.
It brings you
Pokemon.
Joy. You win with joy.
Bill has no joy in his life.
I want to win.
If everybody else is doing it, he refuses to do it.
I want to have a higher score than the person I'm playing up against. And you can't, because you don't get a prize. There's no, you don't have a goal of, like Kevin just said, the goal is to get all of them.
Well,
are you
start
get
going.
All of them?
I'm not stopping till I get them all.
Yeah, you got to get them all, and then you got to defeat the gyms and collect them all. And then if you get Mew is the rarest. Or Mewtwo.
Mewtwo plays?
Mewtwo, yeah.
That's the Pokemon
That's
version.
That's the cat version.
That's the cat version
It's
Pono.
A mystical, magical cat. That has telepathic powers, if I'm not mistaken.
So is Bono.
Yeah.
He's a cool cat.
It all ties in, doesn't it?
It's just fun.
I guess.
You know, I played...
But when you get hit by a car, when you're walking across the street to find a Pokemon monster and get hit by an Audi, then will the fun stop?
I have an innie.
But when will the fun... Like, at what point we go, okay, I just got hit by a car,
I
found the monster.
I won't get hit by a car.
But there's stories about kids that are...
They're
not...
stupid.
I know.
Thinning the herd. Be careful. You text all the time, teenagers. If you text and walk in the street, you're going to get hit, too.
Right.
It's taken me away from Candy Crush. That and Orange is the New Black. I haven't played Candy Crush in over a week. That is huge for me.
But look, but it's one addiction replacing another addiction.
So
you recognize that, don't you?
Who cares? It's fun.
Quick, name the last book you read. Quick. My point.
What's the last book you read?
I'm reading 3 books right now.
You should be focusing on the show.
Not at this second.
No.
But
it's ridiculous.
Why do I don't criticize how you spend your time?
No, but this is what I'm saying. This is what's happening to society. Instead of reading literature,
I'm
people are trying
to
find
read
the monsters.
Literature.
That even
Jesus,
when they find them all, it's not going to mean anything.
You know, we're never going to get our next Rembrandt because everyone's around chasing Pokemon.
It's true.
I am 53 years old. I have done my reading.
No, you're 65. You were 53 when you started playing this game, but that's how quickly time is passing.
If I want to read a book, I will read a book. I don't choose to read a book right now.
But you don't see this.
Does that
as being
make me
decline?
A lesser person than you?
No, but don't you see that there's a trend that more and more people, instead of doing things like reading books, are finding monsters that don't really exist? You don't think that's scary at all? Not even a little bit? Seriously?
Don't you ever like to have fun besides playing tennis?
Every day.
When you go sit at a movie, why don't you go read the book instead of see the movie?
I mean, you're reading books about monsters that don't exist.
My God,
right?
our friend Anna Balaval, God, it's rubbing off. Bill is rubbing off on me, Anna.
Yes, he is. You were my holdout. You were my one and only.
I'm sorry. I'm in Bill's land right now.
I'm not just blaming you. I'm blaming the world that thinks that that's a better alternative to
Who
doing
says
things.
Better? It's in addition to.
I know, but there's no stories right now about the addiction that people have to reading.
Because it's...
I just played this for 2.5 hours on the air because our producers made me. Go on Michigan Avenue. People are walking like zombies doing this. Well, apparently people on Michigan Avenue have to work because I couldn't find one person playing it, but I played it. And I can see how you can be laser focused and get in trouble.
Well, then you deserve
you
to be
You have to
hit,
admit
Anna.
That that's true. Because people are so into this right now that they don't care about the world around them. They just want to find a pretend monster. That's it.
I know that you will consider me an idiot because you said anyone who gets in trouble is an idiot, Wendy. But seriously, I was so focused. I'm like, wait, I got to cross the street now. And my camera woman's like, it's red. Stop. I almost ran into a tree branch.
Oh, my God.
My little girl, my woman was turning right and I would turn left. I also have no sense of direction. So it was kind of scary for me, but I can totally see how it's fun to do it with one of your kids after hours.
Oh, I think a pokey monster got you.
She's pokey gone.
But you do have to be careful because you do get into it. But, you know, that's why I like having ADHD because I can focus on many things at once. So I can walk, talk, chew gum, and catch monsters.
A lot of people would do a jigsaw puzzle, Bill, right?
Right.
Okay, this is like that. But you're outside. You're walking around. You're looking at things.
Anna, you just made Anna hang up somehow.
You said her name right. We got to take a break and talk to Ashley Esqueda, who's the senior editor at CNET TV, host of Tomorrow Daily. And
she can explain this.
What is there to explain? Do what you enjoy, people.
Of course.
Don't let Bill judge you because you don't read literature every
day. I'm trying to figure out which kind of car is going to hit you. I'm thinking in my head which car is.
I hope it's a rich person.
I do too. All right, a break. More show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. This is going to be the national anthem in 6 weeks. You'll see. Ashley Esqueda is here. She's the senior editor of CNET TV, host of Tomorrow Daily. Ashley, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, they're going to play that at the Olympics whenever we win a medal.
Yep.
Oh, my God. If there was a Pokemon Go event, I would finally get to the Olympics.
Don't give up.
All right, everybody, we've been talking about this, and just before you joined us, my kids were out past curfew last night playing Pokemon Go, but here's the thing. They were in our little downtown LaGrange area. There were tons of other kids out there. Everybody is honestly being more social than they were. They're getting exercise, and what's wrong with this?
Oh, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's a national obsession. I mean, it's pretty great. It's a phenomenon. That it's pretty interesting because, you know, people who are around the age of 30 right now were 10 when Pokemon came out. And now it's, you know, and as they got older, they kind of maybe hung up their Game Boys and their, you know, and their Nintendo DSs and things like that. And now they have their smartphone with them all the time so they can get back into the Pokemon game. So it's huge, huge. And even people who have never heard of Pokemon before are playing it. Everybody, it's a huge craze.
My older son, Michael, is a Nintendo snob, so he's always been into this. He's gotten the Nintendo 3DS and he's kept up to date, but this is exciting for him. And then he and his little brother out, hanging out, meeting people. It's already past Tinder in app downloads, and it's getting close to Twitter.
Yeah, the user base it's about to surpass Twitter. More users than Twitter in less than a week, which
is... Oh, my God.
Super impressive, and so much so that investors flocked to Nintendo stock and added between $8 and $9 billion with a B dollars of valuation to the company.
And when will the nation wake up? When will they realize?
You are like the crotchety old man who says, "Get off my lawn with your
in
Pokemon."
This case, I guess I am, but when will everybody realize we're wasting our time?
But Bill, why do you want to wake up from this beautiful Pokemon Go dream?
All right, good point.
You didn't play video games when you were younger?
Yeah,
so,
I did.
Yeah, we catch them all. We got to catch them all. That's what it is.
All right, so I was saying to Wendy, there's no way to win this, right? Do people understand that you can't win this? You can't win them all.
Well, that's the inherent appeal, right? So as you go, it's sort of a never-ending vending machine of happiness. You know, you go in there, you catch a Pokemon, you feel good, and then, you know, you come back, you catch another one. But there's a dark side. There's a dark side to Pokemon Go, guys. What?
Tell us the dark side.
Well, there are some in-app purchases that help enhance gameplay, like lures, where you can set up a lure and Pokemon will kind of congregate around there, bringing people as well, obviously, because they want to catch those Pokemon. And somebody bought a lure and ended up robbing a handful of people at gunpoint, which is not great.
Pokemon would not approve of this.
No. Ash and Pikachu are saying this is not a great idea. So, this is it's pretty interesting to sort of see it kind of unfurl as a social phenomenon and the good uses, which is, like you said, you know, families getting together. I've seen pictures of parents whipping out their old Pokemon cards to show their kids. What the original Pokemon used to
look like. Why are you rolling your eyes? You collect toys.
Oh my God.
What is the difference?
Oh, my God. Because I'm not going to pretend that
it's... It's like showing a kid old baseball cards.
But you can get all the, like on any given year, you can get all of those if you want.
Why is everything so black and white with you?
It just disturbs me that instead of doing concrete things with our lives right now, this has become a thing. That this is the, everyone in the country with all that's going on, this is what they're doing is catching pretend monsters. That doesn't scare you at all.
No, my kid's
doing
it.
It's not your spare time. I just asked you to quickly name a book you've read and you couldn't think of a book you've read.
Because I don't like to read.
Think about what you just said.
No, you think about
those words. I don't like to read.
If it's something I'm interested in, I will pick up a book and read it. Right now, I don't have any downtime. So for 10 minutes in between something.
Then do it. Then catch all the monsters. I don't want to make you angry, but think about what you just said. I don't like to read. You don't find that tragic at all?
I guess I do like to read if I have time to sit back and do it, but I don't.
All right. Okay.
But I mean, that's what.
You had a couple minutes? Catch a couple Pokemon.
And Ashley, that's what makes this world go round, too. You know, like, I've wasted hours and feel stupid for playing Candy Crush when I could be reading a book. If there was a book I wanted to read, I would do that instead. I'm reading a book on how to declutter my house. I do, like, self-help books more than literature at this point in my life.
Well, I got a great book recommendation. Do you want one?
Yes. So I can prove to Bill I know how to read.
It's called Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson, and it's about the moon blowing up. And they have to figure out what to do.
Seven
it's
Eves.
It's pretty great.
All
Seven right. Eves. E-V-E-S. It's awesome.
And
it's very good.
I was just reading something that came over about an hour ago that if you signed into this Pokemon Go with your Google account, it has access to all your Gmail stuff. That's bad.
So that yesterday the news broke that Pokemon Go would have access, full account access to your Google account if you used Google to sign in. Fortunately, it turns out this is not actually the case. It just has access to your username and, what is it? I think it's your username and it's just your email address and that's it, but it doesn't have access to, you know, your deep account, full account access.
It can't get your emails.
It can't read your emails. It's not looking at your Gmail. A couple people did some tests. And they figured out, no, it actually can't access your Gmail. It's only accessing your user ID and your email address if you log in with your Google ID. So fortunately, that's been thwarted. But some people last week are in a little bit of trouble for sideloading on Android. So when you load an app that isn't in the App Store on Android or iOS, it's considered sideloading. So you can do that and load things that maybe are not apps that are approved. On iOS, you have to jailbreak your phone. And on Android, you can actually just click a button in security that says, allow me to load, apps not in the Google Play Store. And so some people really wanted Pokemon Go early, and they ended up sideloading an app, a version of the app that had some malware on it.
Uh-oh.
And so, so it's never a good idea to do that unless you know what you're doing. And even then, you may not be able to know what's inside those Android app packages. They're called APKs. Most people, it's always scary when you know just enough about technology to kind of get yourself into trouble, but then you don't know enough to get yourself out of trouble. So if you're not really sure about sideloading apps, if there's something you really, really want, but it's not quite out in the Google Play Store yet, just wait. Patience is key. And the official app came, hours later, but it, a lot of people had already loaded the bad version of the app into their phone. So
be patient and read a book. That's what we've learned today.
Please.
Ashley, thank you so much.
Right.
Thanks, Ashley.
Thank you.
It's Ashley Escada, senior editor of CNET TV.
Are you
host of
that?
Tomorrow Daily. Yes. I've had it published. It's in book form. We'll take a quick break. Hopefully this national nightmare will be over. Steve's got the news. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Lindsay Rice is with us. Lindsay, you were with us, was it about a month and a half ago?
I think so, yeah.
You told us the story, the true story behind The Natural, the shooting in the movie The Natural. And then you told us about another story that you've been working on, also for DNA Info, right, about the lipstick murders. And Wendy got excited and I got excited. And we said, just keep telling us these tales. Come by whenever you want and tell us these stories. We love these. First of all, welcome back. Great to see you again.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Same.
So tell us a little bit. What do we need to know about these lipstick murders? What went on there?
Well, I feel kind of bad talking about this on such a beautiful day because this is a really gruesome crime. But this is another true crime story of Chicago. This happened 70 years ago this year. Actually, mm-hmm. the 70th anniversary was in January, but you know, this year marks the 70th since this happened. And it really came to my mind because of the popularity of the show, Making a Murderer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got so hooked in that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that, I was just obsessed with it. And when I started thinking about this story, I saw, it's, you know, it's definitely a different tale, but there's some similarities and definitely, still doubt lingering all these years after, you know, this case has basically been closed and the gentleman who went to jail for it died in 2012. So,
and there were some questions about whether he did in fact commit. I got to confess, right. I'm born and bred here in the Chicago area in Brookfield. I grew up and I've not heard of the lipstick murders. Have I?
Well, I think, I grew up like watching a lot of crime shows. And so this was like on one of those, you know, American Justice type, you know, hour specials. And then, you know, working in the Edgewater beat for DNA Info, then I was like, oh my gosh, this is right in my neighborhood. Like this is right in my backyard. And
give us a little background of the lipstick murders.
So this happened in, 1945 and 1946.
Yeah.
And this is about the murder of three women. Two of them adult women and one of them a 6-year-old girl. And, you know, they were horrifically murdered, all in somewhat of a similar fashion. And ultimately, a man who was a boy at the time, 17, he was convicted for those crimes, but under really questionable circumstances and with very flimsy evidence that was later discredited and ended up being one of Illinois' longest serving inmates and then, of course, died in 2012.
Yeah.
So this starts in 1945 in June with the murder of Josephine Ross. She was an uptown woman, and she was stabbed and she was mutilated. Her body was put in a bathtub, and but it looked like this crime had been done with a lot of precision. So that was on the radar of police.
Yeah.
Then about
do we know a motive in this particular crime, or was that hard to determine the motive?
No,
just seemed random.
Yeah, at that point, they really didn't have a lot to go on. So mm-hmm. they're investigating this. And about 6 months later in December, Frances Brown, a Lakeview woman, she is murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And she is murdered in a similar fashion. They find her body mutilated, dismembered near a bathtub. And then the heat is really on because now that the police are thinking, okay, there's the serial killer and they may
sure
or may
looked
not
like
be.
It.
Yeah, yeah. And it's very frightening going on in Chicago. So a month after that, January 1946, is when the case really takes a turn. That's when 6-year-old Susan Degnan from Edgewater is taken from her home. They found like a ladder and the window to her bedroom door actually, window open. First day going back to school from winter break. Her mom finds she's not there.
Ugh.
You know, they're panicking. I mean, it's absolute chaos. This was one of the biggest crimes that had happened at that time. And, they also find a ransom note later that says, you know, don't go to the police, don't go to the FBI, have $20,000 ready and waiting and wait for my word. So
what do you do as a parent? Because, you know, these are bad people who just kidnapped your kid. How do you trust they're going to make the trade with it? You know what
sure.
I mean?
Yeah, right.
It had to have been, I mean, the worst case scenario that you can imagine yeah. as a parent, I would guess.
Are these richer people or not?
Actually, what was interesting is this was...
That's a lot of money at the time. Mm-hmm. 70 years ago, that's quite a bit of money.
Right. And they were living in a very nice part of the neighborhood, you know, right almost there on Sheridan Road. And the dad of the family was, you know, like an executive in the meat industry, which yeah. was going through a lot of turmoil at that time with Upton Sinclair's, you know, the jungle and
oh, yeah.
everything going on. So at first they thought...
I read that book, Bill.
Wendy read The Jungle.
Believe it or not.
She had to run around town finding pieces of meat, phantom pieces of meat.
Actually,
very strange.
If I did do that, I'd read it again.
So at first they thought there actually might be a connection between that. Like maybe somebody upset with the father who knew that he was rich, had targeted the family and wanted the girl.
Yeah.
And we have just a minute before we take a break, but all right, so we have two women who were murdered and now the tragedy of a six-year-old girl mm-hmm. who is missing at this point.
Right.
And they did find her body. Where does the lipstick title come in?
So that comes in right after the murder of Frances Brown in December.
The second of the two women.
The second one.
Yeah.
Someone comes upon the scene and scrawled in lipstick on the wall is a message that says, "For heaven's sake, catch me before I kill more. I cannot control myself." And that is really just kind of...
Makes it more chilling, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And even that message on the wall has been open to debate for years as to, you know, some people have speculated that a reporter that was first on the scene there may have even written that.
Seriously.
I mean, so it's really hard to say where it
was
came
Geraldo
from.
Around then?
Not
that
yet.
Seems like something he would do.
Geraldo's dad. He was around. Wow.
Jerry Rivers Sr.?
Yeah, the first Jerry Rivers was around. But we've heard the police over and over in similar instances say that there's some element in people who do this where they almost want to be caught. They want to leave clues mm-hmm. and make it almost like a game almost, which makes it very twisted.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in crimes as horrific as this, you've got to think that there's something else going on with someone who's capable of
sure.
committing that type of crime. You know, it's and from that crime scene where they actually found the lipstick killer message, nothing was taken from that apartment. So it's just another added layer of why,
yeah.
you know, doesn't really answer that.
We are talking about the lipstick murders, right? Lipstick mm-hmm. murders. And Lindsay Rice is in the studio with us, neighborhood reporter, photographer covering Chicago's far north side for DNAinfo.com.
Available, by the way, Wendy, to come to your house and tell bedtime stories to your kids. This is a service that Lindsay provides.
You know what?
She's got to charge that service.
Yep.
You
extra.
Have such a great voice that I would be able to,
oh, yeah.
you know, they're not comforting stories,
right.
but comforting voice
sure.
of Lindsay Rice.
Yeah. Do Goodnight Moon when we come back. Could you do that for us? All right. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Have they made the Kim Kardashian fat something else?
They're still working
stickers,
on that.
Decals?
They hope to have that ready by fall.
We are talking to Lindsay Rice. She is covering a lot of macabre stuff from the far north side of the city. Works for DNAinfo.com.
You're like the Rod Serling of Rogers Park.
Submitted for your approval. So the lipstick murders we were talking about, two women, a six-year-old child murdered. And where do we go from here now? The suspect, 17 years old, was arrested. Is that where we continue?
Yeah. So after Suzanne went missing, within that day, they actually found some of her body parts that had been, you know, they got a tip and they checked the sewers. And some of those locations where they found her are still there. And I actually went out and, you know, kind of creepily looked in people's, you know, alleyways and
yeah.
back apartment areas.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a strange vibe just to go over there and realize that this was the place, you know, 70 years ago, all these police were standing over this manhole and, you know, discovering this child.
Oh, that's awful.
Horrific, truly.
Yeah. Where do you think the tip came from? Any ideas on who provided that tip?
I don't know. I think that's a really good question.
Yeah.
Could be somebody.
I get one in a week.
Yeah.
So I'm done for the week now.
Could be somebody who, you know, happened upon it and didn't want to have anything to do with it or you know, could be somebody with knowledge of that being
oh,
there.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
So this happened in January. That's when Suzanne went missing. 6 months later, June, police encounter 17-year-old William Herons, Lincoln Wood resident, right outside city of Chicago.
He had a bright kid, as you've pointed out. This is a pretty smart kid.
Yeah, at 16, he actually kind of skipped through high school and was admitted to the University of Chicago. And so he was certainly a troubled child in the sense that he grew up doing some burglaries. And his parents were very argumentative. He had a difficult childhood. So he was able to escape by going to school. And when he couldn't afford that anymore, he went back to,
stealing.
Burglaries and stealings to support him going to U of C. So that's where police encounter him, actually in Rogers Park, which relatively is close to Edgewater where this happened, mm-hmm. but really, you know, quite a ways, locally speaking. So they run into him, they corner him at an apartment building in the process of a burglary. And according to police, he drew a gun and tried to shoot a detective with the gun jammed. And above him, a police officer drops 3 flower pots, which knocks him out cold. He's unconscious.
This is like a movie.
I know.
Yeah,
like a Max Sennett movie where cops would, instead of shooting, would throw flower pots at the assailant.
I know. It's just one of those details that it's like, oh, it's just too bizarre to be true. So they take him over to the Edgewater Medical Center, bandage him up. Then they take him to the Cook County Jail, where they strap him to a bed for a few days. They inject him with sodium pentothal, which is known as truth serum, which basically has no scientific validity of getting anybody to
really
confess.
I thought
the
that
truth
totally worked.
Actually, it's been used in lethal injection formulas.
Sodium pentothal, yes.
Yeah. So they're injecting this kid essentially with this, questioning him for days. They gave him a spinal tap without any sort of anesthetic. And they really put him through hell, and they kept him away from his parents and a lawyer during this time.
Much like Brandon Dassey on The Making of a Murderer.
Right. And so that's where
he's a minor.
And the technique that they use in Making a Murderer, known as the Chicago technique, was really being developed at this time with Herons. And so you see the roots of that and the origins of that being used in this case.
Let me see. I know this is 70 years ago, but we've come a long way in crime solving in 70 years. Is this the sort of thing that, had we had the same technology 70 years ago, would they have been able to solve this almost immediately?
I think that I want to say that they at least wouldn't have convicted him. And that's what a lot of many other people say, that because the standard of evidence that they had was extremely low.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the things they used to convict him, like fingerprints and handwriting and all that stuff, later completely discredited. He passed lie detector tests. And actually, an attorney for the Center on Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern, who was representing Herons later on, he points to a completely different person who actually confessed to the crime to police. But police disregarded his testimony.
Because it's already settled, and then they look like they've made a mistake, and then there's a killer still out there.
Yeah.
That's what critics say.
Tragic.
To your knowledge, was anyone else in the area killed in similar fashion, where they would sort of believe maybe this isn't the right guy, or did that just never happen?
After the fact?
After the two women and the child had been killed, and they brought this kid in, was there anybody else in the area that was killed similarly?
Not to my knowledge. No. Not that I know of. That not to say that didn't happen, but the guy who the attorney at Northwestern points to, it was a nurse with the skill to do this, had a history of sexually abusing his daughter, was in the area at the time, fled the area after that.
Oh, wow.
And confessed to police after he fled the area when he got picked up by police in Arizona. He actually confessed to it. By that time, the pressure from newspapers, just the general public on the police and to solve the crime, they found Herons at what they felt was the right time. And so it's remained
what a story.
Open since then.
You can read the full story. Where do we find this, Lindsay?
That'll be dnainfo.com/Chicago.
Her name's Lindsay Rice, spelled L-I-N-Z-E, Rice. You do a great job of telling a tale, and you should be a detective because you're going and getting all this information. Really fascinating.
Thank you so much. I should be a reporter.
Well, think about it. Consider it. Don't jump to anything, but if you like it. Thank you, Lindsay. We appreciate it.
Yes,
we'll take a quick
guys.
Break, then Kim Gordon has the news, and then more show ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN. That story scared me about the lipstick murders. Now I'm scared.
You know, it's terrible, but I like all this. I like this stuff.
Yeah.
It's just really fascinating.
Sure. Yeah.
All these historical murders that happened in the city and suburbs.
They were in Devil in the White City, soon to be a major motion picture. Thank you, Martin Scorsese. They point out the fact that so many murders back then just out and out went unsolved. They didn't have anywhere near the capability that they do today, although today a lot of murders go unsolved. But back then it was very, very common because of the nature of the country. Somebody would drift into town, kill a person or two, and head somewhere else, and it went unsolved, and that was it. Isn't that terrible?
It is terrible, and we've come so far in DNA evidence and all that stuff, but they're still not 100%.
There's still so many. When you look at what's a good example, let's say the JonBenet Ramsey case, for instance. You go, how in the world could that not be solved?
I know.
With all the technology they have and the DNA that they info that they have, they still can't solve it. It's baffling to me, and that's just one.
And I want that one solved.
That one should be solved. That one should definitely be solved.
I followed that one pretty closely. And then Patsy died. She had ovarian cancer.
Right.
It was a terrible whole situation. And I can't believe that has gone unsolved. You've now refreshed my memory.
That guy came out, was it 8 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago, and admitted to it, said, I'm your guy. I'm the one who did it. And then they proved that that wasn't true at all. I don't know what's in it for a guy to claim responsibility for some murder you didn't commit.
Maybe to get some fame. You're a ne'er-do-well and you just little petty thefts, and now you think you can get a name for yourself.
Yeah,
is that what you want?
I don't think so.
You're going to jail if that's the case.
Right, right. Well, it wasn't him. Here's other good news. It turns out some of our favorite businesses and companies may not be around a lot longer. Now, this is a list that comes out about every 6 months. And some of the names on this list have been on this list for years. At the top of the list, now again, these are companies that they say are in kind of dire straits in terms of their business practices, many of them closing several of their stores. These are national chains. You can find them from coast to coast. For as long as I've been reading this list, and it's been going on for about 7 or 8 years, JCPenney has been at the top of the list.
I have heard that for the last several years that JCPenney will be closing a bunch of stores, and it has not happened.
No. Well, they have closed stores.
But they made it sound like all JCPenney's will fail to exist.
Right, right. And that has not been the case. But they have, I mean, a generation ago, that was one of your most trusted names in retail. If you had a shopping center anywhere, one of the anchor stores was going to be JCPenney's, hands down. That was just a given. And they're becoming a lot fewer and farther between. Shares of JCPenney recently have fallen more than 25%. That's since March. That's significant.
Ooh,
that's a lot of stores, a lot of shares. It says Penney's has been steadily closing underperforming stores. They closed 33 stores in 2014. They closed 40 more stores in 2015. And already this year, they have closed 7 stores.
I guess they have taken a big hit then.
They've taken a huge hit. It says the Texas-based retailer, which has more than 1,000 locations nationwide, also announced cost-cutting measures like cutting payroll and eliminating overtime hours. You'd have to think if you were working for them, maybe having your resume ready wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But on the other side, this has been going on for years and years and years. Their name is always number one on this list.
You're right. That does surface on top.
They are. They are. Another one, and this has mixed reviews here in town, is Macy's.
I am shocked by that. I still am a Marshall Fields lover, and I wish it was still Marshall Fields, but I thought Macy's was doing so well.
They're doing okay, but they're not doing as well as they would want to be doing.
Online shopping.
A lot of it is on, you're right. A lot of it has to do with online shopping. Now,
and it's Prime Day, Amazon Prime Day, by the way, so look for specials today.
It is today, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I know it's today. I think one of the biggest PR blunders in retail history, in this city anyway, was their decision to change the name, especially to on the State Street store, from Marshall Fields to Macy's. And I remember business experts coming out at the time of the changeover saying, there's a way to do this. There's a way to keep the name? Yeah, to keep the name. And it wouldn't have been that hard. But for some reason, Macy's, which is Eastern-based, they're based in New York, had this pride factor. And they were number one in New York for years and years and years and years.
We are not New York, Bill.
We're not New York.
There was a lot of hatred.
Oh, yeah.
And they kept, didn't they keep Marshall Field on the clock out there?
Yeah, it still says it now. It still says Marshall Field's on the clock. But I remember, especially like in those first few years, there were people that wanted to protest the store and say, I know Christmas season is coming up. I'm not going to shop there because they changed the name.
A lot of people did that.
A lot of people did that, but I didn't want people to lose their job. It wasn't the people who worked there's fault. I knew people who worked it.
Right.
It's not their fault. They had nothing to do with it.
You know what's weird? I go to a lot of antique shops, and you can find Marshall Field's shopping bags and stuff, and they're selling them for like $20.
It's
really
a big collector's item.
Come in my closet, people. I collect shopping bags. I have several.
Now, you just offered people a tour of your closet. You're okay with it. If they show up today, you're good with this.
Make an appointment.
Please, right. Please call 45 minutes in advance. It's all we ask. Don't just show up at Wendy's Place. This one, now this, ironic that this is happening today because Sears is closing their oldest location in Chicago, their store on Lawrence, which, have you ever been to that store?
I don't think so.
It hasn't changed. I wasn't there when they first opened it, obviously, but it has the feeling when you walk in, like, it's one of those places where you go, wow, this looks like 1943. It really has been changed very, very little, and that store is closing.
Is it a supper club of department stores where you go back in time when you enter?
They bring you a relish tray as soon as you walk in.
Well, then I'm going.
Yeah, you'd love it. It's great there. In April, Sears Holdings, which owns both Sears and Kmart, announced that it would close 68 Kmart stores.
Yeah, ours, there's one like in the Willowbrook area that went away.
Yeah. It's the strangest thing. When I was a kid, and I can't speak for your Kmart, we had one. I grew up in Oak Forest, but our closest one was in Tinley Park. And they were busy all day, every day.
Yep.
From the time they opened till they closed, you knew if you were going to Kmart, there was going to be a lot of people in that Kmart. I've been in Kmart stores where I'm the only person shopping in that Kmart store.
I don't. But there's just so much competition now.
I guess that's it, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll walk into one and I'll say to somebody there, "Did you guys close this? Is this one closed already?" And he'll go, "No, we're open." Oh, because I'm the only one here. They don't even light the red lights anymore. It's not worth the electricity. It says in April, Sears Holdings, like I said, which owns Sears and Kmart, announced it's going to close 68 Kmart stores and 10 Sears locations that were not turning a profit. All the stores are expected to be closed by the end of July. That's Sears stores. That's the end of this month. Yeah. Sears, which is suffering from its largest dip in operating performance since 2006, would have to close 300 existing stores, or more than 40% of its locations, in order to achieve that productivity that it enjoyed just a decade ago. This is according to CBS News. That's sad, because that's another one that was one of the staples of retail for years and years and years. Sears was
a flagship.
America's store, right? Isn't that what they were called?
I think so. Sears, come America's on. Store? How many times did you go through the Sears catalog when Christmas was here and you circled everything you wanted?
Yeah.
And then you looked at the models in the underwear ads?
Yeah, they had a great section of...
where every man in underpants was looking at his watch.
And women were pointing in the sky.
Yes.
You had four women all standing next to each other and just
with
their bras.
Pointy
and
torpedoes. Right. They were very pointy back then. Madonna had the ideas from those Sears catalogs.
Sometimes I didn't know which torpedoes I wanted for Christmas, the ones in the toy department or the ones in the women's underwear department.
I used to circle the toys I wanted for Hanukkah and then hand them to my mom.
That was so fun.
I loved it.
Right? Wait for that thing to come.
And it was so big when it would come in the mail.
Huge.
You would just grab it and smile and go, "Okay, where's my pencil?"
Right.
And you'd circle it.
Right.
It was so fun. And, you know, you never got... I probably circled 500 items in
that
catalog.
Get two or three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a bra.
Well... Does that count as two?
Did you get underpants?
Yes. Yes.
And
I have to look at my watch.
Underoos or underpants?
Both. One of each. All right. A break and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder. This is a little prelude to Steve's business lunch. This is like the home run derby before the All-Star game. We're telling you all the major retailers that are in some trouble. This is according to MSN. They put out a list every 6 months of businesses you might want to keep your eye on because they're not doing very well financially. They're closing locations. They're cutting costs. JCPenney always at the top of the list. Still hanging in there, though. We told you about Macy's. We told you about Sears. Now, here's one that's a little bit of a surprise for me. American Eagle.
Can I tell you something? I went into an American Eagle probably for the first time 8 years ago to buy something for a kid. And
yeah.
I'm like... wow, adults can wear these clothes,
too. Yeah.
It is my favorite jean, and I thought they were doing fine.
I did, too. They always seem to be crowded, have some tremendous sales several times a year. The one near me in Old Orchard just closed a couple of weeks ago or maybe a month or so ago, and that's sad because I always found stuff I liked in American Eagle. I don't know what went wrong there.
I used to work there.
Did you cover
it? Really?
Yeah. I slang jeans.
Did you?
Yeah. Or slung. Would it be slung? I don't know. The past tense of slang.
Sling is the
sling.
Present tense.
You were a jean slinger?
Slung. I was a jean slinger.
Were you?
Slinger.
That sounds
I'm wondering
dangerous.
If there's any correlations.
So you're leaving the company and they're folding? Maybe.
Could
I wouldn't be shocked to find that out.
Who else? Is there another young person's place?
Aeropostale.
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 You know why they're closing?
People couldn't pronounce it.
Their music was too loud.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
Or is that the other one?
Well, then Abercrombie should close because it smells in there. You know, you can smell an Abercrombie from about a mile away.
That's true. And sometimes the boys who work there don't put their shirts on.
Their cologne.
Really?
I think they blow it through their vents.
Oh, my
have
God.
Have you been in there with the guys? There's guys who work in there with no shirts
on.
No,
but I'm going today.
I was there at Christmas two years ago. No shirts at all.
Do they sell that?
Well, the guy said to me, can I help you find something? And I go, can I help you find something? Because your shirt's missing. Let's look for your shirt, and then you can help me.
Listen, I go to rock and roll shows very frequently,
sure,
Bill.
Sure you
but
do.
That music is so loud, I cannot even stand it.
Yes. No, they're not closing.
Well,
they're
they
fine.
Should be. Aeropostale, isn't that how you say it?
Aeropostale will be closed. They have, in May, they filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. They have lost money in 13 consecutive quarters. The one that I used to go to before I realized I was pronouncing it wrong and then was too embarrassed to shop there was the one in Woodfield. And that's another example of a store that I've never been in where it's not jam-packed with people. So how are they losing money?
I don't know.
It's crazy. Office Depot is in trouble, Wendy.
Where am I going to get my office furniture?
Not at Office Depot.
I'm not kidding.
Go to Aeropostale. Go there and see if they have any.
I think they have a postal meter.
Get that then.
But we just bought a cheap work chair for my husband because he works out of the home.
Yeah.
And we bought two chairs. That's where you go because Office Max closed.
Right.
Office Max was eaten by Office Depot.
I know.
And now there is no Office anything.
Now they're going away. I haven't done it the last 2 years, but up until 2015, last year and this year, I would always still get my date book there, and they would laugh. Like, as I would ask for it, they would laugh, and they'd go, well, yeah, we can get if you want one. I was the only reason that they stayed open, I think, was for that date book. I know now you can put stuff on your phone,
I
do that now.
I kind of understand. We have, like, a family calendar that we still use. I have everything on my phone, but you still have to do both. And so Day Runner, did you get, like, a little Day Runner?
What's it called? Weekly Minder, it was called.
Does it mind your week? That.
Yeah, mine's my week. And then I would spend anywhere between 10 days to 2 weeks taking the numbers out of my old book and putting them into the new book. That was the first 2 weeks of every year we spent doing that.
That's
I will miss
fun.
You, Office Depot. The Children's Place is closed. Well, not all of them, but many of their stores are closing. There will still be some.
Very expensive.
Are they expensive? Yeah.
Very expensive. Nice clothes, little place for a kid to play in there. But
yeah.
To me, I thought that niche thing, because you can get it. There's a children's department at any
every
department.
Store has
yeah.
that. Yeah. So their stuff was expensive. I don't remember buying stuff. I remember going in once or twice and not being thrilled with it. And that was the end of our experience.
Because it was too expensive.
It was too expensive. Now this one, how can this be? Walgreens is in some financial trouble.
All right, this upsets me.
Walgreens.
You know when Norm would walk into the bar and cheers and they'd go, Norm.
Right.
When I do the drive-up prescription thing, we get so many for ADHD in our family that, you know, hi, Miss Snyder.
They know
you. Who are
you
picking up for today?
Yeah, yeah.
What will I do without Walgreens?
There are places.
They sell beer.
They do sell beer, and they sell, like, craft beer.
They sell everything.
I know. Everything's there.
Well, in this Walgreens, you can get the sushi.
Yes.
And a smoothie.
Right.
It is pretty.
And underwear,
right.
Bill.
This one is pretty amazing. You can get underwear in case of an accident.
Yeah. Please don't elaborate. I don't want to know.
And maybe you should go to the Depends aisle.
They've got that too.
So you want to visit the sushi bar first, and then whatever happens, happens. It was right across the street from us,
and
it was good sized, and then it moved into the Wrigley building, and it's twice the size now, and they do have almost anything.
And there's one by the Chicago Theater. I was killing time before a show once and took the boys there, and it's like five floors.
That's a high tech Walgreens.
That is amazing.
Their alcohol department rivals any in the city. Theirs is
it
really extensive.
Big. And poor Prince went to Walgreens so many times.
Yes.
Walgreens is synonymous with us growing up. We've always run to Walgreens to get your prescription filled.
It says in April 2015, the largest U.S. pharmacy chain, and I think they're based here. I'm almost positive Walgreens
Deerfield.
Is based. Is it Deerfield?
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks, Kim. I couldn't remember. I knew it was somewhere close by. The largest U.S. pharmacy chain announced that it would close 200 stores as part of an effort to cut costs by $500 million. If you walk up and down Michigan Avenue from one end to the next, I think there's about five of them just
there
on this one
lot.
Street, right?
Well, consolidate, but don't close them. I got to use all my points.
Yes, please, Walgreens,
and
wait.
Save $5.
Right. In the future, in order to seal a $17.2 billion merger with Rite Aid, Walgreens may be forced to close as many as 1,000 stores. They have 8,000 locations in the U.S., and they're pretty big in Europe now, too. when we went, the last time we were there, they were just starting to become a big thing there because they've got their own brands out there. But now Walgreens is global. But
that's
in trouble.
Sad.
In trouble. How can this be on the list? Walmart? How could that? Have you ever seen a Walmart not do well? I've never seen one not do well.
It is always so crowded at a Walmart. Always.
In an attempt to consolidate, Walmart announced at the beginning of this year that it would shut down 269 locations around the world, including 154 in the United States, including all 102 of their small store Walmart Express locations.
Wait, can you get a gun and cigarettes there? Actually, not a gun. Didn't Rosie O'Donnell do something?
Yeah, I don't remember
the
specifics.
Did she boycott them, or did she get them not to sell guns anymore?
I think the latter. And you can get a ladder there.
Not in the Express store.
Not in the Express stores.
Not big enough.
Nope.
Well, that's sad.
This week, Walmart, in an attempt to take on Amazon head-on, announced a free two-day shipping service nationwide. But the fun of buying from Walmart is going to Walmart and seeing who's shopping there. I want to see who's shopping there. Very sad news on this one, Barnes & Noble, but we knew that. Think about that. All the bookstore chains that used to be plentiful, from Walden Books to B. Dalton Books to Crock & Brentano's and on and on and on, they're gone.
Borders.
They're gone.
But at the little Anderson's bookshop, there's one in LaGrange. There are several. One in Naperville.
There's Barbara's Books.
And I love those little bookstores.
Yeah, they're great.
Seem to be doing okay, but the big ones like this, that's tough.
That's too bad, too.
And Amazon has taken them down.
Yeah, that's direct cause and effect.
Yep.
I mean, you can look right at Amazon and go, that's what's doing the bookstores in. Barnes & Noble, it says, is on an upswing, kind of. The brick-and-mortar store, and then it says in brackets, yes, they do still exist, plans to close just 8 stores this year. That's not bad. That's the fewest number of locations shut down since the year 2000. In fact, it's Barnes & Noble's physical stores that have been propelling the company's growth in the past year. That's a surprise. You would think they'd do a lot more business online, but no, people are going to the store. Still, the number of Barnes & Noble's locations has decreased. In 2008, they had 298 stores, but as of right now, they have 640 stores. So even though that's bad news, it's mixed, because at least they're hanging on, so that's good news. Do we have time for one more, or are we out of time?
We have one more. We may as well just say it, because I didn't know this store was still open.
The Finish Line.
Was that like
an ironically named
foot? And
yeah.
There are all those different... sports places.
Yeah,
and
their
malls.
Goal is to sell you high-end, not just high-end, I guess, tennis shoes or gym shoes, but kind of all across the board. They've got a pretty good price range.
They're pretty expensive.
They are pretty expensive.
When you can go to like a Famous Footwear and get that same shoe on sale,
yeah.
There's too much competition. Someone wants to know if this is an April Fool's list, because every store to me, according to 630, says... is strong and viable, and that's what I thought. Some of these really surprised me.
I'm amazed at a couple of these. Some of them I'm not shocked by, and I'm also shocked, excuse me for this, but I can't believe Radio Shack is not on this list.
Haven't they already closed?
A lot of their stores are closed. Remember, they tried to just be called The Shack for a while, and that didn't work.
Did
so they
get Shack to work
Shaquille
with them?
O'Neal? That would have been brilliant. No,
even I can figure out how to turn
this
on.
I know. Get Shaquille O'Neal in there. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Eff and it's Wendy Snyder. It's part two of our show, our Tuesday version of the show. We're at 312-981-7200. Call us or text us.
I thought it was Monday, so I'm happy to find it's Tuesday.
Oh, no.
Hey, guys, can I just interject for 1 second? I know we're not carrying it live on this air, but on WGNradio.com, the ceremony is now underway for the 5 Dallas police officers that were killed. President Obama will be speaking at some point during the seminar.
Ceremony.
Ceremony, thank you.
Sure.
And so if people want to listen in, they can go to WGNradio.com.
Very good. Thank you, Kim.
And George Bush will be with?
Yes, he's there. Michelle Obama, a whole host of dignitaries.
A difficult day.
Yeah.
A very, very difficult day. It was announced earlier that Bernie Sanders will be giving his endorsement to Hillary Clinton. I wouldn't call that a surprise at all, would you? It's not really a surprise. I think we all kind of anticipated this. But here's the question I will throw out. Does this make a difference, really? I don't know if anyone's endorsement really makes a difference. They make a big deal out of it whenever anybody's endorsed by anybody with a prominent name. But is this going to sway anybody, do you think?
In my personal opinion, the younger voters who absolutely adored Bernie Sanders and wanted him more than anything in the world, mm-hmm. they wanted to feel the burn, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I think in, and I could be wrong, but I think in their eyes, they're going, all right, well, if Bernie says she's okay.
She must be okay.
Then, okay, we can throw our support. I think this endorsement does matter because I didn't. I know he kind of had to endorse her, but for a while I didn't know that he was going to.
I'm trying to think of, and I'm having a hard time coming up with a name, although I'm sure there's a name or two out there. Kim, maybe you know, because I can't think of one. When the last time somebody on one side, the Republican side or the Democratic side, somebody of any prominence endorsed somebody on the other side? Because I can't, I'm sure there must have been a couple. I just can't think of it.
I can't think of anything.
I don't think you typically do that.
Yeah. No, you don't. No, you don't typically.
Although
do
in this
it.
Election, who knows right. what could have happened?
Right. Well, one of the guys who is one of the front runners to be the vice president is a Democrat.
Who?
He Kim, what's the guy's name? They just announced it either yesterday or Sunday. There's some retired general or admiral who was a Democrat who Trump is taking a serious look at.
Really?
Naming as his, he's on the short list of candidates.
Yeah, hold on, I'll get it for
but
you.
But I'm blanking on the guy's name. I had heard of him before, but he never much of a headline maker until yesterday or Sunday.
I thought his daughter Ivanka was going to be
Heavily in the running. She's got the shoes and the fashion, as we found out from
yes.
Fox and Friends.
And, you know, Indiana Governor Mike Pence is going to be with Trump tonight at a rally in Indianapolis, and he's one of the front runners.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Along with New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
I'm telling you, Ted Nugent's the guy. Seriously.
Maybe he is.
I mean, they seem to have similar views about things and the same crazy hair, although different lengths.
Right. The lengths are very different.
And they both just speak whatever they want to say.
Whatever comes to their minds, yeah. I'd be so shocked if it was Chris Christie.
There's no way.
I don't think so either. I don't think so either.
I know Chris was, shining his shoes and doing everything he could to be part of it.
It was
SNL just did such a funny part of that where Chris Christie was just hanging around like, anything you need, you know?
That's
not going to happen.
Are you somebody who waits until you find out who the vice president is and goes, okay,
no.
Now that I know that, they have my vote? Because I don't know if anybody is, really.
In a perfect world, there would be a Democratic candidate and a Republican candidate that I both loved.
Yeah.
It's not here.
No.
You know, Bill, you were just talking about Trump vetting a retired general, and his name is Lieutenant General Michael Flynn.
That's the guy.
But there's just now a Politico article coming out where Hillary Clinton is also vetting a retired Admiral James Stavridis for vice president.
Oh.
So maybe they're on the same wavelength.
Do you know, I'm trying to think of with Flynn, because I'd only heard his name a couple of times up until Sunday or yesterday when he was apparently on the short list of Trump's potential vice presidential candidates. I don't know if he was a disgruntled Democrat. I don't know what would happen.
Well, they say in this article he's a lifelong Democrat who most recently served as the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency for President Obama.
All right, so knowing that,
how does that happen then?
I don't know.
If we know that to be true, and we do, if the Republican Party is already kind of iffy on Donald Trump and his ways, if he says, oh, by the way, the guy that'll be in the second chair is a Democrat, does that win people over or does that make people run in the other direction? Does it?
I don't know. It kind of shows I'm trying to represent both sides.
I don't know if it even says he represents both sides or I'm just going to do whatever I want to do.
Right. Right.
You know, I'm just such a renegade. I'm going to go rogue
anybody.
On everybody.
I can pick either my daughter or I could pick a Democrat.
Ted Nugent.
Or Ted Nugent. Or one of the Pokemon monsters.
Or
Omarosa. I can pick several vice presidents if I want. I can get a guy who plays professional hockey. Whoever I want to get, I can make my...
I would vote for him then, maybe.
Right. Right. Patrick Kane for vice president. All right.
I'd do that.
Think about that.
But I just don't know what to expect. But getting back to my point,
well, that's the whole thing, Wendy. Nobody knows what to expect.
And through every time we turn a corner, it's something we say, what?
That can't happen, can it?
It just did.
Yeah.
But when you asked me, would a vice presidential running mate sway me? If there were two candidates on both sides of the fence that I actually loved and would love to see as president, it might sway me depending who they picked.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because if you really love both candidates and really think that the Republican and Democrat are going to be great for this country, then yeah, maybe kind of wait and take a look at who their running mate is. I go back to Hillary Clinton definitely not picking Elizabeth Warren because she wants to be the only female. I can't see her pairing up with another woman.
See, I don't think that would enter into it. If I'm Hillary Clinton, I wouldn't even let that enter into it. I would just want to pick the person that was the best for the job. And her being a woman would make her realize that the sex part of it shouldn't play any kind of a factor. You just go, I got to get the best person.
But she wants to be the only woman playing in a boy's business. Mm. And if you have people who are opposed to a female being president and you have two of them, that might push people away.
The Cagney and Lacey ticket.
Now you're talking. That's who I want to vote for.
Cagney and Lacey for president.
Sharon Gless and
Tyne Daly.
Let's go.
That'd be a great
run.
The only time that I can remember since I've been of voting age that I liked both candidates was when it was John McCain and Barack Obama.
Amen.
And that was the time that McCain went with Sarah Palin. And that was even that wasn't the deal breaker, but I think it was a huge. I think in retrospect, I think even he.
Yep.
I think even he would
say
right
now. What did I do? He says.
And he had that thrust. If you read up about what happened there, that was really more thrust upon him than him going, you know, who'd be good is that Sarah Palin. He was kind of told by the party, that's our move.
That took him down.
Yeah.
And boy, I loved her at first. I liked
Did
her.
You?
Yes. At first, it was like, wow, she's kind of an every woman. She seems pretty cool.
Yeah.
She seems, wow, she doesn't know much when she started talking.
You know what's funny is, like, right off the bat, because it was a name most Americans weren't familiar with at the time.
Right.
So what they were selling was, and this was a very smart PR move, I think, they were selling her approval rating among Alaskans, which was off the charts high. So for people who weren't aware of her, you go, wow, the people in her own state, they love her.
Yeah.
There must be something good about her. But then you're right. She was kind
talking.
Of paraded out in front of the media and everybody went, uh-oh. Uh-oh.
We're still going, uh-oh.
Yeah. So we have will have the endorsement of Bernie Sanders. And when does that, do we know exactly when that goes down? When is that official?
Yeah, he did that earlier.
That's already been
official,
done?
Yes. He said, and the quote is that together.
Were they together during this? Were they on stage somewhere together or was this just him?
No, they were together.
They
There's
were.
Video
New
of them.
Yeah.
Yes. Where's the one quote that I, together we're going to beat Donald Trump.
Oh.
I'm paraphrasing because I can't find the exact quote, but
And
yes.
When I say together, I mean her doing it while I sit back and watch. Did he say that? I say together, but I mean her.
No, but he means together because he's trying to say.
Will he campaign for her? Will he go on the road, do you think? And actually.
Whoa.
I wonder how much of that'll go on.
Steve, do you think it matters that Bill had brought up, you know, with Bernie's endorsement of Hillary Clinton, Bill asked if an endorsement matters. But don't you think people who really were feeling the burn are saying, well, you know, if he says it's okay, then maybe I will cast my vote that way.
Yeah, I think an endorsement matters, but it doesn't matter as much as if there hadn't been an endorsement.
Yeah, I guess.
Like if he had withdrawn or you know, just not done anything, that could have been very damaging. I don't know if him jumping on will be as helpful as it could have been damaging. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think that it will help her, sure.
All right. Here's another question that stuck in my head. Who right now, 2016, who is the one person or entity? Because you know what happens is every local paper, the Sun-Times and the Tribune will endorse a certain candidate. And you see this in other cities. They'll throw their weight behind one candidate or the other. Is there anybody out there, a person or entity, whose endorsement would mean the absolute most?
Oprah's.
Oprah Winfrey? You're going to go for Winfrey? I can't think of anybody out there, because you hear about who's being endorsed by who, but I don't see anybody go, well, as long as that guy or that girl says that's the candidate, then that's got to be the candidate.
Unless it's out of character, I think no one. I mean, you know, the Chicago Tribune almost exclusively endorses Republican candidates for president, the New York Times, I'm sure there are exceptions to this,
But you know, almost every time.
Right. So if you were to see, like, say, the Wall Street Journal is a very conservative editorial page.
Sure.
If they endorsed Hillary Clinton, that would be big.
That's a big deal.
Because no one would expect that.
All right. We have people who want to call and talk to us, including Dave. Hopefully he can hang on. 312-981-7200. Shall we continue this?
Yeah. More of this in a moment. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Bernie Sanders has now officially endorsed Hillary Clinton.
Feel the hill.
seems dirty somehow,
yes,
doesn't it?
I'm not sure
they'll go with that, but they may. Is this a shock to anybody? I don't think it is a shock, but we've posed some other questions to you, like, has one party's candidate ever endorsed somebody else, or are you influenced by somebody's endorsement, or whose endorsement would you have to hear before you go, Bruce Springsteen likes that guy or that girl? I'm voting for that guy or that girl.
Bono would sway me.
Sure.
No, he wouldn't. I don't like when people get involved in the political end of things.
Bono tends to do that sometimes.
Rosie O'Donnell,
maybe.
Dave, what about you?
How you doing? You think Hillary Clinton would ever ask Bernie Sanders to be the vice president if she wanted his voters?
I find that to be an interesting question. I don't know much about politics and never paid attention
Neither.
Until this year. Bill, what do you think? Will Bernie be Hillary's running mate?
I would be shocked. I wouldn't mind seeing it.
I know Trump could be.
You know what?
Howdy Doody was still alive. He makes good Trump candidate.
Howdy Doody for vice president.
Yeah,
that's an interesting idea. I don't know.
Trump Doody 2016.
Trump Doody ticket. That's a good one.
Yeah, but that face all the time with a fake smile.
Right, right.
I don't know. Bertrand, what do you think about that? Any chance that Hillary's going to ask Bernie Sanders to be her running mate?
No.
There isn't,
and
is there?
Why, though?
I don't think he would help her that much. I think she doesn't want to be seen as going that far. He's a socialist. You know, even though he did well in the primaries, he's still a socialist. That doesn't play well in the country.
But
I think she'll find someone who can help her more.
But, Steve, that word for a long time was almost one of the blackest of marks
you could throw
at a politician. But it softened so much, and he kept saying democratic socialist. There was a hyphen in there.
It softened in the primaries, Bill.
Yeah.
Maybe not in the general election. I mean, that's what they were calling Obama when they wanted
to doom him.
They called him a socialist, and now you got a guy who says, I am a socialist. I just don't think that would play very well. And frankly, I don't know that they like each other that much.
Yeah, you know what? It's really funny because politics is a game where you have to sometimes pretend to play nice with others. I don't know that they do either. There seems to be a sort of a mutual respect, but
they didn't play very nicely for a while.
Yeah, I know.
He was attacking her. And
I know. But you could say that about Trump and the entire field of candidates, all the 16 guys and women who went up against him, and there's still a chance, it's a remote chance, that one or two of them may get the vice presidential nod. But
I bet not.
If you were one of those guys and Trump was ripping on you, let's say Chris Christie, because he seems to be the one with the best chance of that field of candidates.
I don't think he has a chance at all.
I don't think he does either. I'm shocked that there's still a belief that he does. But if you're Chris Christie and Trump continued to just malign you, wouldn't you just go, I don't even want this.
No,
why would I want this?
It's vice president of the United States.
Yeah.
The guy I can't figure out is Ben Carson.
Yeah, I know.
Because, he's basically called him a psychopath.
I know.
He questioned his religion.
I know.
He was different off the air than he was on the air. Well, didn't Dr. Carson come back and say that?
I guess he did, but I mean, he was saying that as if it was to be believed, and it's, but Carson's right back with him, so.
Isn't that crazy?
That is weird to me.
Trumps to no one?
Trust no one.
They should just add a letter or two. Trumps to no one. That's our country slogan. All right, we need to take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then we have a lot more planned for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, just a couple things coming up on the show. First of all, our legal analyst, our show's legal analyst, Rich Lankoff, will be by in a little bit to talk about something having to do with your Netflix account and what you may be doing.
It's my lifeline.
What you could be doing something illegal with your Netflix account and not even know it.
God, I hope not.
Go to the big house. Also, we'll talk
about.
Wouldn't
that be ironic? Because I'm watching Orange is the New Black on Netflix. Wouldn't that be ironic if that's. I could end up on the show.
The ultimate 3D television.
It's not a real prison where the show's.
I would make a great prisoner.
Would you do well
on that show?
Orange is
not
the New
in
Black?
Real life.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to prison, please.
No, I know. We'll also talk about the U.S. Holocaust Museum. Susie Snyder will be by later on to talk about that. Right now, though, the news, it's 1:30. It's all sponsored by ExecutiveGreenCarpetCleaning.com. Here is Steve Bertrand.
I really don't want to go to jail.
Well, you're going to jail, Wendy. Eventually, you will end up in a prison. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. You commit crimes regularly, and you have to pay the piper.
You don't go to jail for swearing, okay? That's really the only thing
swear jail?
I do.
I thought they had swear jail.
That's where I would fit right in. Can
yeah,
I tell you that?
Swear jail.
There is no swear jail. Just jail.
There's only regular jail? I thought there was swear jail.
All right. Well, I've been binge-watching Orange is the New Black on my Netflix account, and I don't know if I should say this on the air, but
uh-oh.
I mean,
what?
It might not be my own personal account. Rich Lankoff is on the line with us. Now, I'm worried about this sharing passwords like those in Netflix could be a federal crime. I may be going to jail.
You realize this is on the air, right?
Yep.
You're not speaking in your head.
Rich, please counsel Wendy and explain to her you can't admit to a federal offense on the radio.
I didn't admit to anything. I just know that you can have different profiles and different avatars that fit into your family.
I'm going to use some intense legal words here. Ixnay on the admission A.
Right.
All right. Well, what's going on with Netflix?
Well, the good news is I think you're okay. A lot of attention was, a lot of people were concerned, like you are, with the decision by a circuit court, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. They handed down a decision that some people are interpreting to mean that you cannot share passwords for Netflix or Amazon or things like that. But that's not exactly true, and I could explain why if you want. But, yeah, the case got a lot of attention, but it really doesn't mean what people think it means. Basically, this case involved a defendant who was a director at a regional director at an executive search firm. He left the firm, and he secretly started his own competing business. The problem is, and the key point of the case was he used someone else's login information. I think it was his former assistant. He used her password. She still worked at the company, and he downloaded some pretty proprietary information from the company's internal database. So the company went after him, and they alleged that he was violating something called the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act and also the Economic Espionage Act. And the court just decided that he, in fact, did violate these different pieces of legislation, which is, you know, nothing really that dramatic. It seems like, you know, he did violate, this act by using someone else's password. But the key thing that came out of the case, or one of the key, you know, piece of language that freaked everyone else, was the dissent. In the dissent, one of the judges said that he would hold that consensual sharing of passwords is not allowed anymore. He basically said that he believes that as a result of this decision, the sharing of any kind of password, just like in this case, the assistant used or allowed this former employee to use her password, he thought that meant that you cannot share passwords in any context. But that is not what the court held, and for a couple different reasons.
Rich, do you know if you sign up, let's say today's the day you sign up for Netflix and you sign some agreement and you agree to a price that you're going to pay every month, does it say point blank who you can and cannot share your password with?
No, I don't know. I suspect it does, but in the wake of this,
it says you can create accounts and under, your child, your household name. Like you each will have, it says right there, same with like Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
You can share with your family. It's definitely written when you hit the check mark to agree to the terms. It's in there.
It says it in there.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, but I mean, in the wake of this, the head of HBO, the head of Netflix, in fact, said that people sharing accounts hasn't been a problem, not enough of a problem to make them do anything differently, certainly not enough to, have them prosecute individuals. Now, down the road, when people are maybe abusing that and sharing it more than they are subscribing it, will these companies go after people? maybe, but, you know, that's not what this case means. First of all, you know, this was a dissenting judge who said that maybe in the future this decision can be held to, you know, mean that you cannot share passwords for these kind of stations. And also, very importantly in this case, this was a case involving trade secrets where the defendant, the former employee, signed a confidentiality agreement that said he will not do this kind of thing. So this case was a pretty open and shut case. Again, in the future, maybe someone can bring a case, you know, on behalf of Netflix or another kind of streaming, but that's not what this case means.
Because I heard this yesterday in the news and freaked out about it. And
were,
I think
you were afraid that they could come after you.
Well, no, I was just afraid I was going to have to get my own account.
Oh.
Because to me, to have four people in your family each paying like $9.95 a month,
right?
That's crazy.
Right.
So I was worried about that.
It did get a lot of immediate, you know, immediate attention and people, you know, because the judge did say that, you know, it can be held to be, you know, it can be interpreted as you can share passwords. That's why it got a lot of attention. But that's not what this case means. If you read the case, that's not what the majority said. In fact, they said it wasn't to be interpreted that way. In this case, the case that was decided by the Ninth Circuit, the key words were without authorization. In that case, there was clearly no authorization to access this information. If you are giving your password to your mom or to your daughter, that is with authorization. So there's a big difference there.
Aren't there websites, Rich, where people openly and actively trade passwords of all different kinds for things like Netflix or websites? That goes on all the time, doesn't it?
Who would you trust?
I don't trust anybody.
Somebody in a chat room that you're going to give your password?
I don't trust anybody.
Listen, it
I don't even trust Rich. He's our guest. I don't trust whatever his answer is. I don't believe him.
There are such sites. It reminds me of back in college when you would, you know, slip the cable guy a couple extra bucks to stream the wire down to your apartment.
No, that never happened.
No, never.
Never. Never. So let's say Wendy was upset with Netflix for whatever reason. She's mad at them. And she comes on the air and she goes, hey, I'm going to get back at Netflix. Here's my password. Have at it. Watch whatever you want. It's on me. They'd come after her, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine with that kind of act, certainly with someone who is of Wendy's stature and, mm-hmm. you know, with her following, I'm sure that Netflix would very quickly, you know, send a cease and desist letter to her. And maybe prosecute her for that. But
I wouldn't do that because I don't want everybody else's garbage in my queue.
Oh, that's okay. That's a good point.
You don't even know what that means.
I'm not sure what
you
said. No, I don't know what that means at all. But I agree with you, and I don't trust Rich Lankoff.
Well, that's probably good advice. If you're like me, then your daily goal is to keep your queue to a minimum. That's
right.
It's one of my obsessions. Keep right. that queue down.
All right. Patricia has a question because really when this was reported on the news yesterday, I freaked out a little bit.
Yeah.
Not so much so where I actually forgot about it until Rich was on again.
No.
So, Patricia, did you have a question about this?
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. When I got the notice from Netflix that they were changing their pricing from $7.99 to $9.99 a month,
mm-hmm.
it also said that that included two streams, and if you wanted four streams, it was going to be $14.99 a month. What does that mean, using two streams or four streams at one time?
And can you cross streams, Rich? Do you know
no.
the answer? You're not supposed to. Okay, what does
I
that
know
mean, Rich?
From being an avid Ghostbusters
right.
fan,
you should not cross streams. What does that mean, though?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know what.
Well, that's not accounts. Two separate streams, in my opinion. I don't know what that means either, because we can all watch different things on our Netflix at our own house.
At the same
time,
on different TVs, right?
Yeah, maybe you get two different accounts. I'm not sure.
Kevin, you seem to know?
I took it as like you can now have two users or maybe two streams going at once, but I mean, I don't know.
I know in our house, because everyone in my family has their own account, but within one account. So we can watch things simultaneously on different
right.
televisions through Netflix. So my guess is that's what they're referring to. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking, too. So that means, like, in a household of four people, if
yes.
you want to watch four different programs, does that mean now you're only limited to two, paying the $9.99 a month?
That's what it sounds like.
Well, the number of users that can stream at the same time will depend on your new Netflix plan. So if the two stream is $9.99, then only two people can watch different things on that same account at the same time. You have to pay $14.99 for four people.
Okay. And do you know, does it say, Wendy, if two people are already using that, if a third person went to log on, they would say no streams available or whatever? Or would they automatically charge you another?
No, they would just say, you know, not you're not available for this stream at this point, or your stream is busy.
Okay. Okay, thanks, you guys. I appreciate the information.
Thanks, Patricia. Absolutely. Rich, hang on one second. I believe Barack Obama is speaking in Dallas right now. Oh. We go to Steve Bertrand. Yeah, it's Bill Lefferts, Wendy Snyder, and President Barack Obama was speaking at a memorial in Dallas. And as we joined him, it seemed to be some laughter going.
He was getting big laughs from the audience, from the people in the church there.
Steve had found out, because we had, were just joining it at the time, but Stevie Wonder was brought up by the Dallas police chief to honor some of the fallen police officers. Are you aware of this, Steve?
My understanding, I wasn't listening to every moment either. But, you know, Wendy, there have been a series of laughs in this. This is a very public, long ceremony. But apparently the police chief had made reference to Stevie Wonder, and President Obama followed up on that. I mean,
I have the joke that he said.
Oh, good.
That we're playing from my phone because I don't know how to pull it up on the board. So this, after Dallas Police Department Chief reads some Stevie Wonder lyrics or something to honor some of the fallen officers, Barack Obama pays homage to him with a quick joke.
Chief Brown, I'm so glad I met Michelle first because she loves Stevie Wonder.
That's pretty funny, but wow. That, you know, is that the place?
As you can hear, he's getting great response. It's risky. Steve had said that it was not unprecedented that other people said things that got laughs from the people there at the service. It's not easy to do. It's a very somber toned day, and he's very good. I know people are all over the board on whether or not they like Barack Obama or not, and I'm not here to shill for him, but I do have to say this. I can't think of a president who's better. This is a tough situation, and
he's
been forced to do many, many of these over the last couple of years to speak under sad circumstances. And I know there are people who don't appreciate the job he's done as president, but I can't think of a president. Actually, Ronald Reagan came pretty close, who just managed to take events like this, as sad as they could be, and kind of bring some semblance of order to them. He's really, really good at that.
And Cheryl's going to explain this a little more. And when you think of memorials, even like with your family members and at funerals, it's sometimes such a wonderful break when someone says something funny about the person.
Oh, yeah.
And you have plenty of time to be sad and somber again. Cheryl, you want to build on the context of this joke?
Yeah. So what had happened was the police chief had said when he was a young man, he couldn't speak, you know, he got all tongue-tied trying to ask girls out. And so he would use lyrics from songs for girls that he liked. It was certain, you know, he mentioned a bunch of, you know, 70s artists. He would use their lyrics if he just liked them. But if he really loved somebody, he'd pull out Stevie Wonder. So he was saying to the families, he was quoting a Stevie Wonder song and saying that that's what he had used when he really loved a girl. So that's the context of Obama's comment. He's glad he met Michelle first. Because she really loves Stevie Wonder, implying if the, you know, somehow the police chief had gotten to her first, she would have been wooed by his Stevie Wonder lyrics.
Right.
So that was the context. But, you know, previous speakers, President Bush and others, were making sort of lighthearted comments, too. And there were many other moments of, well, it's hard to say levity, but, you know, just trying to lighten the mood. And it, you know, it sort of felt like, I mean, not really a memorial. I don't know what you call it, but it was, you know, obviously celebrating and thanking these people for their ultimate sacrifice, but it was with humor, too, which, as you said, they have plenty of time to be sad. And
you need that break. You just need that break.
I think so, yeah.
Thank you for clearing that up.
All right, love you guys.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thanks, Cheryl.
But on a day like that, where, I mean, think about it, it's just all kinds of sad. The reason those people are gathered together is just
it's sad. It's anger. It's fear. There are a lot of emotions.
So for him, for President Obama, or for anybody else, former President Bush, or anybody else who took a chance and said something to kind of lighten the mood, as you heard, it was very successful, because you do need some sort of release in that situation.
They
roared. Yeah.
Is he going to do stand-up when he retires?
I wonder.
He's pretty good at performing.
I've seen him, you know, at that correspondence dinner and in other like situations where he just...
Jimmy Fallon, he's been really funny.
Yeah, he's got that quality to him. And I know, again, I know there's people who are his detractors and say, you know, I don't like anything he's done over the last 8 years. Okay, but even if I were one of those people, I would even have to admit that in those sometimes incredibly uncomfortable situations, he tends to do really well. And
agreed.
Yeah, so, all right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We have a lot more coming up for you. It's Bill Effen and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Home improvement and DIY projects Sunday mornings on WGN TV. Watch House Smarts with Lou Manfredini at 10:30, followed by Weekend Workbench at 11.
You talked me into it. I wasn't going to do it. Hey, you know, Steve Bertrand was away for a while. He went to Prague, and then now he's back. He's doing the news for us. But guess what? Now he's going away again.
I'm exhausted.
Right. You put in a day work. You're done.
Almost a full day already. Yeah.
Cut it out. Steve, you explain, if you wouldn't mind, what's going on with you.
Well, I'm just going to have a surgery tomorrow. And I don't want to bore people with it too much, but it's thoracic surgery, and I will be on a medical leave for, I hope to be back in a couple of weeks, at least with a business lunch, but it might be a little bit longer than that. We'll have to see.
Well, we wish you the best.
Thank you.
We're getting older. I got to get my knee replaced in December. It's like cracking me up. What surgery do you have coming up, Bill?
Breast implant. Why is that funny?
You will never leave the house again.
We could have done it at the same time, Bill.
We could have gotten a discount.
Would have been much easier.
That's fine.
But it's just funny, you know. This is our radio station, and look at what's happening to us. We're getting older.
Right.
So, funny that I work one day and then take a few more weeks off. Is that?
No, I just mean it's funny, you know, we've been on the air a long time, all of us, and it's like you used to talk about, hey, what are you doing this weekend? Or what are you doing next month? Having surgery.
Right.
Things have changed, just things we talk about.
Yes. But now, just so people don't get overly concerned, you can be concerned for Steve, we all are, but not overly concerned. As far as everybody knows, this isn't the kind of thing where we might lose you. I mean,
why would you even say that?
Because I don't want people to panic.
It's a significant surgery, but I mean,
anytime you go under anesthesia, Bill, it's scary.
Don't use anesthesia, Steve.
Oh my God!
Do not use anesthesia.
I asked my doctor when we first discussed this if I needed to make peace with my enemies, and he said,
"Who's got
no.
time for that?"
So, what a
great way of phrasing that. Listen, it's scary. I don't know if you've had any major surgeries before, either of you. It's really scary.
I feel better now. Thank you.
No.
What are the other bad things?
No, it's really scary because your mind makes it scary.
Because you play out worst case scenarios in your head. Sure.
Medical science has come so unbelievably far.
Right.
They kick you out of the hospital very quickly, which is the road to recovery quicker. It's just, it's your mind that is scaring you. The procedures.
I'll think of that when I hear the saw.
Don't think of that.
As they start to.
Don't think of that. And you're having this done at Target?
No, actually Zaire.
Zaire?
Right. Target was booked.
Oh, no.
And Zaire was vacant.
Oh, it was? Yeah. All right. Well, you're doing the right thing.
Hurry and use Zaire before Spirit Halloween jumps into it.
That's true. That's so true.
Like next month, we'll start seeing Halloween decorations
They'll
already.
Be everywhere. This is tomorrow.
Yep, tomorrow. And, it's something that needs to be done, and I just... have some issues with bones in my chest that need to be moved around a little bit.
Right.
And so they're going to do it. All I can do now is take the drugs they give me and let it happen. So,
Steve, initially they had talked about, they weren't in any hurry to do this. They were looking more toward the end of the year, but it was decided for you, but I think by you said, let's get this done now, right?
Yeah, I just have a crazy schedule. I want, you know, to be with my kids at their parents' weekends in the fall, and we've got a trip to Ireland in the fall.
And you need time to recover. This is a smart move to get it over with.
The election was there, and
right.
So I just figured that right after we got back, right after we got back from Prague was my biggest window, so that's why it's scheduled so quickly like this.
All right. All right.
Just get it over with. You're smart to do it, because honestly, you would spend time worrying about it if you were doing it later.
Yeah. No, I'm not worried at all.
Don't be.
No, you're going to be
seriously,
fine.
Seriously, the fear is in your mind. I've had several surgeries.
Yes.
I do not have breast implants, although sometimes I wish I did.
Well,
I got butt implants.
You did?
Yes.
Wow. Well, they put them in the wrong place.
But I've had several surgeries, and it's just scary in your mind. They know what they're doing. Everything is great. So we wish you the best, and we hope to talk to you soon. And I know some of the recovery is pain management, so you can't really be on the air when you're in pain. Ow, ow, ow!
That would not be good for anybody.
So, and if you have to work from home, we're here, and we wish you a speedy recovery and can't wait to hook up with you again on the
air. I will see you soon, maybe in about 7 minutes.
All right. That's not far off at all, is it? That's not bad. Really quickly, while we have a moment, do you know who Chris Berman is?
He's a sports guy?
Yeah, over at ESPN. He's leaving soon. This is his last year. This is the last year for Chris Berman. He's going to step down for a while. Well, forever, actually. That's what you do when you retire, right?
I don't know. People don't really retire forever anymore.
Right.
Larry Sanders is coming back.
Yeah.
No. Larry, what's his name?
Larry David?
Yeah. Ever since he's been Bernie Sanders, I've combined him and Gary Shandling.
No, he's right. You're right. He is coming back. Chris Berman was doing the Home Run Derby yesterday. You know?
Oh, yeah, I watched a little of that.
Well, there was a joke that seemed innocuous at the time, but now he's being criticized, and they say that he was being disrespectful to the memory of Muhammad Ali. Can I tell you what his joke was, and you tell me if he was, because I don't think he was.
All right.
One of the guys in the Home Run Derby, the defending champion, is Todd Frazier, who plays for the White Sox. Todd Frazier made the finals against a man named Giancarlo Stanton, who hit 61 home runs yesterday.
God.
He just, like, every time they threw the ball anywhere near him, he hit it out of the park. I think he broke every record for this home run derby with the 61 home runs. So at the end of this, Chris Berman says, in a year where we lost Muhammad Ali, down goes Frazier, meaning Todd Frazier. But what he's doing is he's making reference of one of the most famous boxing lines of all time, Howard Cosell, down goes Frazier, when Joe Frazier fought many years ago. Not against Muhammad Ali, by the way. So a lot of people are saying this is so disrespectful to say in a year where we lost Muhammad Ali, down goes Frazier. Don't do that.
I think it's funny.
It is. I mean, he was just taking a pop culture reference. Now, some people, including the guy at Yahoo Sports, and I'm trying to find his name
on
the story.
Did he put the Yahoo in Yahoo?
He's the main Yahoo over at Yahoo Sports.
Had Yahoo in charge?
He says the problem was bringing up the very beginning. He shouldn't have said, in the year that we lost Muhammad Ali, down goes Frazier. He should have just said, down goes Frazier. But that was...
Might agree with that.
Yeah. But it almost needed a little bit of setup. And you could also argue he was paying tribute to Muhammad Ali by even bringing up his name, because again, Muhammad Ali was not in that fight. That was George Foreman and Joe Frazier. So, you could second guess that all day long. It's just a joke, but I don't think it was the worst thing in the world to just give a little tip of the cap to Muhammad Ali.
I think it's funny.
It is funny, isn't it?
I think it's really funny. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's nice to have the setup, but even just down goes Frazier is known enough where people would have gotten it.
I swear to you, that's what I was thinking too, is you could have easily just said it. And he could have said it more Howard Cosell-like for anybody who was unsure on what that reference meant. Down goes Frazier. I mean, that's all you needed.
That's why I think he didn't need to say in the year of Muhammad Ali. It's not bad, but, he was being selfish and setting up his joke so more people would get it, I think.
And that came back to bite him.
Yeah. I think just the down goes Frazier would have been perfect.
All right. Well, next time, although there won't be a next time because now he's retiring.
Well, we can write for him.
Right.
We'll
send him some material and see if he'll reconsider his retirement. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Steve has the news and then a lot more, including the U.S. Holocaust Museum, a very, very important story. Stay where you are. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we have another Snyder in the studio with us right now. This is Susie Snyder. You are the curator for the Washington, D.C.-based U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Something we were just talking about off the air, I wanted to make sure I covered your mission correctly. You are in Chicago. You are collecting items to put in the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. It's not a closed exhibit. You are constantly getting new items, aren't you?
We are. The museum is actively collecting. We have been actively collecting the entire 23 years we've been open. It's very important that people understand we are still seeking survivors and their loved ones who have not given material. We would like to illustrate their stories.
And tell us some of the stories. How long have you been here in Chicago? You're collecting some items. You're going to go back to D.C. Can you tell us about some of the items and some of the stories behind those items?
Sure. I've been here since Sunday on this trip, and I'm going to go from here to California and meet with people in California as well. But on this trip, I met with people who were rescued by going through. They went Trans-Siberian Rail through Russia and then into Japan, and they were able to get out because there was diplomats who issued them visas in Vilna, Lithuania. And by mere fact that these people were able to get these visas, that enabled them to travel. And these people ended up coming out and ended up in the United States by 1941, which is quite late, but still they made it.
Do they experience, I'm sure they do, guilt that they were able to survive and so many other people were not?
They do express guilt, but it's also very difficult to understand that when you were in a place like Eastern Europe after 1939, 1940, you really had to go through and down into Italy to even fathom getting out. You just could not get out any other way because the borders were closed at that point on the Western European side. And at that point, people either needed to flee or they needed to, by going through Italy, or they needed to go into hiding. And I met with a woman this afternoon who did just that. She was a 8-year-old person and her parents placed her in hiding in Belgium.
I would imagine, Susie, and this is just by virtue of the years that this took place, it's harder and harder to find these people, isn't it? Their numbers are dwindling.
It is. The numbers are dwindling, and the most wonderful thing is that people are still, we still have survivors that are very active in our community,
yeah,
and that speak actively. And at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C., we have probably 45 or 50 survivor volunteers who actively work with us. They translate,
yeah,
they speak to groups. So we still have quite an active group of people.
All right. Tell us if we have not been to the Holocaust Museum. You said it's been there how many years?
23 years.
I went to Washington, D.C. as probably a young teenager with my mom and sister and brother. It's a great family trip. There are so many things to experience and so much history of this country and everything else. I have teenage boys. I should have already taken them.
You should have, but it's never too late. And the museum has wonderful changing exhibitions. And we have a fabulous exhibition right now on collaboration, which is important to look at both sides of how people rescued or were not able to rescue or chose not to rescue. And I think it's an important museum. 40% of our visitation at this point is school children.
I know this is a strange question, but because the stories are so different, do you find a commonality in the survivors? Is there anything that seems to be a common thread that runs through their stories?
The commonality that I would say I find within the survivors is that there is a lot of hope, and they went through a tremendous amount. They lost parents, grandparents, yeah, extended families. And they have really survived, and they are wonderful people. They have wonderful families. They have their own children, their own grandchildren, great-grandchildren. And they've really made it a mission to make sure people know what happened during the Holocaust, especially with what's going on today in our present-day world.
Yeah. Does Susie, that hope – oh, I'm sorry. No, just really quick. Does that hope ever surprise you? Because I see that same hope. And sometimes you say to yourself, how could somebody who's been through the ordeal that they've been through have that much hope? Are you ever a little surprised by
it? Yes, we're always surprised by it. But and we say to ourselves every day, we can't imagine what it was like. We can't even understand what it must feel like.
Yeah.
But we're really, you know, we're buoyed by these people.
Mm-hmm.
Susie Snyder in the studio, no relation. DC-based U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum curator. Tell us a little about this diary that was written by a survivor at what, four concentration camps?
Yes.
Is this wrong information? Tuesday, a 16-page diary written by a man who survived at least four concentration camps. His daughter will be donating this.
Yes. And it's probably often people sat down and wrote their memoirs immediately after the war. And when they couldn't write it during the war. So the memoirs are very important to us, especially ones that date 1945-46, because those are immediate memories. And as time goes on, you remember things differently. So for us, those are very important memoirs to have. And we really welcome that kind of information, because in 1945 and 46, people were not documenting the Holocaust. We have one wonderful collection that was given to us that was recordings done by David Boder, who was here in Chicago. He went overseas to do the recordings, and he was able to record people in the 40s immediately, and that's really all we have.
Wow. Wow. This particular person survived four different camps. How would that play out? Was transferring from camp to camp, was that a common thing?
It was. Most people would be, especially in Eastern Europe, they would be deported from perhaps a ghetto to a place like Auschwitz, but Auschwitz had slave labor camps. And as the Russians were moving in on the Nazis towards 1944, 1945, the Nazis became scared and they moved their victims out of the East and towards the West. So then they would march them to concentration camps in the West.
Mm-hmm.
And then in those concentration camps, they might do slave labor in sub-camps there.
What are some of the items in the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum that shock you? The whole thing is shocking and heartbreaking, but are there some that really touch you?
Yes, absolutely. We have a diary that was written by David Cherkoviak. This is, for me, it's a pronounced artifact, because he wrote the diary while he was in the Lodz ghetto in Poland. He died in 1943. He did not survive the ghetto because he died of starvation. But the thing that is shocking to me is that he writes about the degradation of his family and how his father became so hungry and so really just beaten down that he was stealing food from his own children.
Yeah.
Because the Nazis caused them to either turn on each other or to work with each other. And many people did work with each other, but this is an unfortunate case where David Cherkoviak's father really just lost all hope and also died probably in the ghetto.
What do you make of the people who saved so many people? We've heard stories over the years about people who, even though they were told point blank, if we catch you hiding anybody, you're dead, we're going to kill you. And yet so many people did that. What do you make of those stories? That's just amazing to me.
It's amazing to us, too. I mean, we find that to be very strong, and we are very impressed with people who did that, especially in Poland, because if you were caught, you were killed, you were executed. And yesterday I met with a woman who explained to me that her mother, who was in hiding with members of her family, was in France. And the two people that hid her family in France after the liberation were killed by townspeople because they were hiding Jews. So a lot of people took great risk, incredibly great risk.
And the war was over at that point when they were killed?
War was over, yeah. There was a lot of retribution after the war, unfortunately, especially in Eastern Europe and especially in Poland. And then I think one of the amazing things is that many times entire towns rescued people. So we have that example also in France, where a whole community risked their lives to rescue hundreds and hundreds of Jewish children.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that was a common thing, too, where parents, and I can't imagine this, just sending your children away. You need to survive. We'll figure it out on our own. I'm sure that happened in so many situations.
Yes, and it was an incredible leap of faith. Now that I have my own children, I can't imagine doing that.
Doesn't that change everything? Having a child really does change the way you view everything, and you would do anything to keep that child alive, and in a way you understand it more. You know, trying to keep them alive, it's like you'd do anything.
Yeah.
Can I ask a favor, Susie? Throw your headphones on. There's some calls. Again, it's Susie Snyder from the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. She's the curator in Washington, D.C., and Jerry has something he wants to throw your way. Jerry, go ahead. What did you want to ask?
Yes, I just wondered, has the lady who's here from Washington, has she checked with the Skokie Holocaust Museum at all?
I actually work really closely with their curator. We work together. They borrow artifacts from us. We borrow artifacts from them.
I see.
So we work with the same community, and we currently have an exhibition that's there on loan from our institution.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for the information.
I was curious.
Thanks,
Jerry. Appreciate it. Do you want to take another call? Do we have time for another call, or should we take a break?
Take a break.
We'll take a quick break. Susie Snyder's here from the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. If you have any questions or comments, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Susie Snyder is here. She is the D.C.-based U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum curator. She's in Chicago on a collections trip as part of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum's urgent race to rescue evidence of the Holocaust before the last generation of Holocaust survivors are gone. How does the process usually happen? They usually somehow inform you that they have something, and then what happens exactly from there, Susie?
Depending on where they live, we have curators who live in a number of places, curators who work in a number of places.
Yeah.
So I generally travel to and from Chicago a lot, so I come here. One of my colleagues goes to Israel. One of my colleagues goes to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But we have offices in New York, California, Florida, Chicago. So we often work in collaboration with those offices. And somebody contacts us. We usually like to meet with people in person. We try the best we can. Sometimes we can't. But the very first thing they have to do is really contact us.
Right.
And there is a way to do it. We were asking Susie off the air. I'm a bit of a hoarder. My dad died when I was young. I hang on to things, but I never really go back and look at them. If someone has a relative that was involved in the Holocaust, how do they contact you? And do they contact you just to say what it is they have? Maybe they're not ready to part with it yet?
Exactly. We just want to know that they're out there. We're happy to work with them on their time frame, and they can send us emails at curator@ushmm.org.
You've already told Wendy and me this, but we want to share it with everybody. You guys are very low pressure. If somebody has something, you want to just document it and let it know that it exists. If they're not ready to part with it, you're very understanding. There's no pressure involved, right?
There's no pressure. I mean, obviously, we know the importance of it to family members.
Yeah.
We're dealing with a live constituency, people that it's, you know, we're not talking about a Van Gogh painting.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, you know, some of these people use the collection. They're still doing research on the collection. But it's important if you're a survivor that we work with you, because every generation removed from the collection, we know less and less.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
Yep.
I mean, think about it. Before, when our grandparents were older, we didn't have iPhones to very easily ask our grandparents questions. My grandfather came from Italy. It would have been great to just record him and ask these stories, and it's like you don't realize that till they're gone.
Yeah.
So it's great to get the stories. And Susie, we have Dave on the line who has a potential artifact. Dave, this is Susie Snyder, curator with the D.C.-based U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I'm not sure you could use this in its form, but I have a letter, and I was trying to get the curator address down, but I didn't get it off, so maybe you could say it again. But I have a letter that my dad wrote when he was at they were brought over his division. Well, it was under Patton, and in 44 and 45, they started finding the camps. And I only have a couple of letters from my dad, but one of them he talks about that one of the camps they liberated, and I don't know which one it is, but the soldiers were, the German soldiers at the time, and they might have caught them by surprise, they were dressing up as the prisoners. And they didn't know what to do. They couldn't, differentiate between the two. But anyway, the letter's interesting in what it's talking about. And I never knew it existed, and I didn't know if that was something that the museum would want. And it's real fragile. I've been going through all his things and his pictures and like things and trying to get them archived. But if a copy of it or something of an actual combat units, what their take on it when they were finding these camps.
What an amazing find, first of all. And Susie, do you work with some of these people to help restore these items?
So we have a conservation staff, and we do stabilize the collections when we bring them in. So a lot of what we have is on fragile paper, and we see this a lot. I would say this is something that sounds like it would be of interest to us because we're also very interested in the liberation aspect of the Holocaust and trying to document what soldiers and liberators saw when they came upon the camps. And we will work with families to determine if it's something that we want. But from your description, it sounds like it's of interest to the museum.
So here's the address again, Dave. It's curator@ushmm.org, and that stands for U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, ushmm.org, curator@. What a story. I mean, just finding out more information really moves the story along, and you need to get these artifacts before you don't have access to them anymore. Dave, thank you so much.
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Susie, thanks for being here. And again, we want to urge people, if you're anywhere near Washington, D.C., you owe it to yourself to see this great tribute and museum to one of the darkest periods of human existence, really. But it's one of those stories where if you don't understand history, we are doomed to repeat it. You have to see what happened. It's unbelievable. It really is. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
That's Susie Snyder from the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. A quick break, and then we'll find out what Ro and Anna have next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.